Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, dining reservations are open at Carthay Circle, some new treats for the holidays, expanded Downtown Disney hours.
Salt and Straw has some new flavors, more bad news for cast members and Disney parks. We talked to former cast member Stephanie and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of December 2nd, 2020. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Christopher J. for supporting the show. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Without the community of support, we would not be able to produce the show and get through this difficult time without the parks. Cry, cry, cry. The supporter Discord chat has been a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like theme topic days.
Movie nights.
Everything coming up soon. So
lots
for December,
yeah,
Muppet Christmas Carol. We had a gift exchange. We've got everything. So just head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up and become part of the community.
Well, our friends over at All Enchanteers have extended their sale. So this was their Black Friday, Cyber Monday weekend sale, and they've extended it for all of their 3D printed products. So they're all 20% off. So really great to get some last minute gifts for your families or perhaps for yourself. The deadline, though, to get things out and to you before Christmas is December 18th with basic shipping. So we are getting into that crunch pretty soon here of make sure you order it in plenty of time ahead to make sure you get it. They have a new product. They have Disney clocks, and they are super fun. So here's the Fab 5 minus 1. Poor Minnie. So we've got Avengers. This one turned out cool. The Lion King. Spider-Man.
I like this one.
This one's also pretty darn epic. So lots of fun things from All Enchanteers. The other thing, too, that we wanted to mention is the theme for the Ear of the Month Club is Winter Wonderland.
Well, now let's get to the news.
Carthay Circle is now available for dining reservations. Guests who would like to reserve a time to dine at the restaurant on Buena Vista Street can head into the Disneyland app and schedule a time to dine. There is still the option to walk up and be seated, but Disneyland highly recommends that you have a reservation. Reservations are open as far out as the park's calendar, but have been very popular. Go figure, right? Also note, if you have a dining reservation, you can enter Buena Vista Street up to 1 hour before your reservation with your entire party present.
So they can bypass the line. That was something that...
That's a big thing.
Some people were saying before was the mobile ordering. People thought, well, maybe if I mobile order, we can skip the line. No, but if you have a dining reservation, yes.
Which
However, I went online today because I was curious to see how this process went. I could not find a single day or time.
I believe it. I've heard because a couple of people in our chat were trying to get reservations, and thankfully they were successful, but it sounded like it was not an easy thing to do, which, you know, doesn't surprise me at all, right? Because it makes sense that it's super popular, especially to be able to do the reservation for, and just the fact that you can, it's kind of your golden ticket to get into the gates without having to wait for who knows how long is obviously a huge incentive as well.
Now, do you think that they should have, I think we talked about this a little bit last week or maybe on some stream or something, where we talked about that they should have done reservations to get into Buena Vista Street instead of having people line up.
Yeah, I think so. I do think if and when Main Street opens, I feel like that's the route that they're especially going to have to take with Main Street. I do think that Buena Vista Street, right, is kind of a learning opportunity for them. So they're just kind of figuring out what works, what doesn't work. Prime example is the dining reservations. Mm-hmm. We opened without dining reservations at Carthay Circle. Now, like a week after they're open, dining reservations come up. So Makes sense to me.
For guests that are lucky enough to get into Buena Vista Street, there are some new holiday treats over at Trolley Treats. A new vanilla cupcake with blue icing, white pearls, and Mickey ears is available, along with a chocolate cupcake with green icing in the shape of a Christmas tree. The cupcakes are $5.99 each, and the review from the Disney food blog has said that they're a little sweet.
Well, it's a ton. I mean, it's a whole tree's worth of frosting, it looks like. There's a lot of sugar on top for that Christmas tree one. They are very cute, though. I don't know. Cupcakes aren't, like, really my jam, but they are cute.
I can go... See, here's the problem for me. So, I know it's Disney, and I know they're probably fantastic or whatever, but I can go to our local grocery store and buy like a dozen for like $7. So it's hard for me to pay $5.99 for one cupcake. That's my only problem. Maybe. I love cupcakes though.
Yeah, maybe they're, I don't know.
Well, they're made with Disney magic, right? Mm-hmm.
Hours at Downtown Disney are being expanded for the holiday season. Downtown Disney was opening at 10 a.m., but that is being pushed back now to 9 a.m. The shopping and dining district will be open from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. until January 2nd, with the exception of Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve, when it will close at 8 p.m. Christmas Day will have a delayed opening of 10 a.m.
I was surprised they were open on Christmas.
Well, think about it, right? The parks were open Christmas Day, so... It makes sense. I did see reports. Obviously, we were not able to go ourselves, but I did see reports of people that went on Thanksgiving Day and went on Black Friday. And actually, the crowd levels were pretty low, which
really?
I'm not really surprised for Thanksgiving Day. That kind of made sense to me. But I was okay. A little surprised with Black Friday just because I feel like a lot of people take that day off. So yeah. I kind of wonder if it's like the Galaxy's Edge phenomena, right? Everybody was thinking it was going to be super busy and super packed, and so they just avoided it, so then nobody went.
I mean, that's smart. You know, and with Thanksgiving, I would have thought that. So we'll find out. This did interfere with the fact that we talked about last week that they had changed some restrictions where people had a curfew and everything. So they were going to be open until 10 p.m. It looks like now 9 p.m. is kind of their thing. So it gives them that hour, cast members to be able to close down, guests who are there to be able to get home and not be in violation of the curfew. So that's good. Once again, Salt and Straw in Downtown Disney have whipped up another fun flavor for guests. Among the options are Duwanta's, Terramina Spiked Eggnog, Cocoa and Peppermint Patties, Gingerbread Cookie Dough, Almond Brittle with Salted Ganache, and more. The new flavors will be available through the holiday season.
So unlike the Thanksgiving flavors they came out with, I want to try all of these holiday flavors. None of them sounded not good to me. Versus Thanksgiving, I was a little like, I think I could pass on all of them.
Yeah. I like eggnog. I don't know how much it's spiked, so I don't know how like alcohol-y it might taste. And so I get worried about that. It's because it looks it's got tequila or something in it.
It has a splash of sherry.
Oh, okay. The cocoa and peppermint sounds interesting. One of these things I was looking at, so they have a great cookie swap flavor.
This one looks interesting.
And it looks like just a bunch of stuff like thrown in together. So I'm not sure.
It's a bunch of different cookies. Do you know what a cookie swap is?
No.
So a cookie swap is where like I make, we'll say there's five people going to the cookie swap. So I make 5 dozen cookies of my specific cookie recipe. So we'll say it's gingerbread cookies.
Okay.
Well, you come and you make 5 dozen cookies of snickerdoodle cookies, and then the other people, everyone makes 5 dozen of whatever their cookie of choice is,
sure,
and then you swap, so then everybody leaves with a dozen of each person's cookies.
Oh,
does that make sense?
Yeah, I've never heard of that before.
A cookie swap, so it's a bunch of different Christmas cookies mashed together in the ice cream. I thought it was a fun and cute idea.
The almond brittle with the salted ganache looks really good. Doesn't it? Like
all
it's got chunks of chocolate.
All of them look good to me.
That's true. But one was just like more pleasing to the eye, I guess.
I kind of wonder because, right, we went from a very savory lineup of ice creams before for Thanksgiving. I'm wondering if maybe they didn't do very well.
Sure.
Because everything for the holidays is sweet, 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 sugar, sugar, sugar.
Sure. I feel bad now because so many people in our live chat are talking about how they love or have been to cookie swaps, and I've never even heard of this. Producer James, have you ever heard of a cookie swap?
I've always heard of it referred to as a cookie walk, not a cookie swap.
Oh, yes.
But yes, we would do that growing up in my church every year. So,
Maybe that's what it is. Because, see, I didn't go to church, so that's probably why.
Yeah, it could just be a, I don't know, community, like certain communities did it and others didn't thing. I don't know.
Well, yeah, and like James said, you know, a Midwest thing, you know, because, you know, I know they're not Midwest necessarily, but, you know, like we have, what do they have? What's a Midwest thing? Like a casseroles? But we had casseroles in California, too. There's some stuff that's definitely Midwest. Cheese curds is only a Midwest thing.
Not only.
It started in the Midwest. Anyway.
With holiday shopping in full swing, Shop Disney has started offering same-day shipping on select items through Instacart. The downside of this is that in-store pricing and sale prices don't apply to items ordered this way.
Yeah, so what that means is in-store pricing might be cheaper, like they might run like a special in-store sale, or they might have a regular sale price. So whatever the regular price is what it's going to be, even if it's on sale. Sure. And they also said in the small print that you also might have to pay processing fees or delivery fees. And I'm like, okay, I get that, but I can just have it shipped a couple more days, or I could just, because these come from your local Disney stores where they're coming from, mm-hmm. So I could just go to the Disney store and pick up my order and not have to pay the fees, and I could get the better price. That's just me, but it's interesting if you're busy and you need that thing tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a nice convenience thing, or if you're still not wanting to step foot in stores,
that's true,
then that's another nice option for you as well.
Would you do this?
Well, we would need a Disney store close by, first of all. I probably wouldn't, because I really enjoy... I also, full disclosure, have never used services like Grubhub or Uber Eats or any of that stuff. I just go
get
myself.
It.
Yeah. So I enjoy going and doing it myself. And especially with shopping, part of the fun for shopping for me is browsing at every... like, browsing and looking around to see what there is.
Yeah.
So
Disney loves you for that, by the way.
And needed to, it's a nice option, but I don't think it would be my go-to.
I guess you're busy as it is, but I guess if you were even busier and you just couldn't even get to the store, but you knew you wanted a couple things.
That's true. Yep.
I mean, you know who we have? We have Weekly Tiers. We could be like, please get that for us at Downtown Disney and send it to us. Disney has issued refund checks for the full amount of the Premier Annual Passes this week. The Premier Annual Pass is the pass that includes access to all the U.S. Disney theme parks on both coasts. The refund checks are for the full amount and not just for one coast or the other. No word on if it was a requested refund or something automated. That question did come up during, I think, one of our streams or something, where they weren't sure if it was something that was just automatically sent out, or did somebody have to request it? So
yeah, this was kind of interesting, and it was something that I didn't really think about, but right. So for those of you that don't know or didn't understand, the Premier Annual Pass gets you access, and basically you have an AP to both Disneyland and Disney World. So obviously, if you have the Premier Pass, you could be using your AP still at Walt Disney World, but you haven't been able to utilize the benefit of having Disneyland included with that, of course, since Disney's been closed. So it makes sense, because I don't know how you'd even begin to try and credit that back, since you had access to one but not both of the resorts. Because I'm still trying to figure out and wrap my head around how exactly Disney is going to be able to handle the Disneyland APs once the parks do reopen, what that's going to look like. It seems so simple of, oh, we'll just extend it out. Well, now that it's been so long, I just don't know if they're going to be able to do that or not. But anyways, that's a whole nother rabbit hole that we could go down. So it makes sense to me that they did this. However, I do feel bad for those Premier Annual Pass holders, perhaps, that were utilizing their AP stuff at Walt Disney World, because now they don't have a pass at all. So now they just have to purchase tickets like the rest of us day visitors.
Yeah.
LA County, which is adjacent to Orange County, where Disneyland is located, has entered a second Safer at Home order through December 20th. This doesn't mean anything directly for the resort, but guests living in the county are being advised to stay home as much as possible.
Yep. So, I mean, it's next door to Orange County. Who knows what Orange County is going to do? I think somebody in the chat earlier was just talking about how the whole state might be having another lockdown where people will have to stay at home, which means that a lot of these things that have reopened will probably close down again.
The Walt Disney Family Museum actually just had to close back down because their county slipped back into the purple tier. So, it's sad, because I feel like we just are starting to get these things back. We're starting to figure out how to do things. with the current with the current health situation. And so it's a little sad that these places were figuring it out just to then have to close back up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'm just gonna say one quick thing and then we'll move on. What happens is things start looking better.
Yeah.
And we let our guard down. Yep.
We get a false sense of security.
Exactly. And then we have to like go back. So we're on this like TikTok thing of we start getting better. So we start opening things up and then it gets worse. Mm-hmm. Because we don't wait till it's totally gone, which I understand it's difficult to do that. But I don't know. I'm glad that there's supposedly a couple of vaccines that are going to get approved. And then it's just who's going to get them and how quick is it going to get out to everybody and who's going to take them and not take them. And I just want it to be over. I want to go back to Disneyland. I want to go see people again. I want to hang out with people, places. That's all I want to do. I really want to go back to Disneyland. I'm sure everybody does, but
we all do, I'm sure.
With the continued closures, Disney's theme parks division has been forced to lay off another 4,000 cast members. And actually, since I wrote this earlier today, I think there was another news report that they laid off like another 2,000 on top of this, bringing the total to 32,000. In addition to these cast members, another 37,000 are on furloughs as of October 3rd. Before the pandemic, Disneyland employed 32,000 cast members and Walt Disney World employed 77,000.
So this is just so, I don't know, just so crazy to me, right? Because I never really put much thought into how many people Disney, the company, employed. But now seeing these, what feels like massive, massive numbers of layoffs and people that are furloughed is just like, how are there still people working for the company? How are there still people there? Obviously, there's way more people working for the company than those that have not been able to go back to work during this really terrible time. But it's really interesting. I do know, so just like personal experience, right? As you guys all know, Vern and I have been trying to plan our Disney wedding. We're going to have a Disney fairy tale wedding at Disneyland that was scheduled this year in April. Coincidentally, the first phone call I had with our Disney planner happened to be the like day before all of the parks were closing. So that was not great timing on my part. And so anyways, that department now, we actually had to push back, of course, because I just don't think Disneyland's going to be open. And if they are open, it's just not going to be what we want it to be for our wedding. So we pushed our wedding back. And my actual wedding planner, I actually never got a chance to talk to because she was furloughed. I'm not 100% if she maybe got laid off. But then the person that I had been talking to also was just furloughed. Geez. And I know that there was only like two people in all of the Disney fairy tale weddings for Disneyland that were working. And now they just laid one of them off. And so my last person that I was just communicating with actually works in a different event type planning
but they've
department.
Been good.
Yeah, she's been great. So, but it's just interesting because so now I'm doing wedding planning stuff with not somebody that's part of the Disney fairy tale wedding team because they're all furloughed right now. Except I think there might be like one person in the office. So it's just crazy.
Well, if you think about it from Disney's standpoint, like with the parks not being open, weddings are not even probably on their radar.
But the thing that you got to think, right? All of the people that had weddings planned since what, March?
Yeah.
We just pushed into 2022.
Oh, yeah. No, it's going to be tough.
That's a lot of people that are having lots of questions. So it's just like, oof.
I think one of these times when everything is back and you have a date and maybe even after you get married, I think it'd be nice to have an episode where you talk about like the whole process.
The process.
Well,
I mean,
not all the COVID process, but I just mean like you could talk about the process, what it was like, but it was different for you. But like this is the general thing, because I think you would have liked to have heard from somebody that went through the process kind of how it was, right? Because you didn't really.
Well, the process normally is quite different than what my experience was. So yeah, it's been interesting. Not only has Disneyland been affected by the increase in cases around the world, but two other Disney parks around the world are closing down again. Disneyland Paris, which was closed but planned on opening for the holiday season, will be closed until February 12th per government rules, along with Hong Kong Disneyland, which was just reopened for the second time for the 15th anniversary, also mandated by the government to close back down again. We do not have a reopening date set for Hong Kong yet.
So I feel really bad for Hong Kong because this is the second time they've opened and now had to close again. It's nice that they were able to reopen for sure. But it's just this back and forth. And can you imagine being a cast member there and like, you're back to work? No, you're not. You're back to work? No, you're not.
And I'm just thinking of the logistics of it, right? Like, it takes a lot of work to close the parks down and to open the parks back up, I'm sure. It just takes a lot of work to open the parks in general. So think of like attractions. I feel like when they know that they're closing, they probably have to do some extra stuff to the attractions. They don't just flip a switch and say, we'll see you next time.
Yeah.
You know, and then just
turn
flip
the power
a switch
off
back
and leave.
On and say, cross your fingers that it works. Like, I'm sure there's some sort of like maintenance and whatever stuff that they've, the extra stuff that they've got to do. And like, think of all the food. That's the other thing too. Think of all of the food at all of these restaurants.
Oh yeah. Well, they've been donating those to food places, which is great.
Disney had to buy all of this food to then donate it. And in Hong Kong's case, they've had to donate it, this is the third time now? So it's just crazy. It's costing the company a ton of money.
Well, and that's why they said with Hong Kong, they didn't give a date. They did give a date for Paris, which is February 12th, which is still quite a ways away.
Yeah.
You know what's funny?
It's just
say it's quite a ways away, but it's only, 2.5 months? I mean, mm-hmm. I know 2.5 months is a long time, but I can't believe it's going to be February in 2.5. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, it's crazy. To end the news on a bit of a highlight, Disney has updated the opening credits for Black Panther this week in celebration of what would have been Chadwick Boseman's 44th birthday. The new credits feature clips of Boseman in the movies as well as on set. We'll have a link in the show notes to the new credits that were shared by Marvel Studios on Instagram.
Did you get to watch this?
So I didn't see it on Instagram. What happened was, I saw that this was going to be there and I went to write this article. I opened up Disney Plus. I went to Black Panther, and I started it forgetting that they have a whole intro scene before the credits. So I like skipped through, but I didn't want to miss the thing. So I finally get there and I watch. I'm like, oh, that was pretty cool. Because at first it seemed like it was going to be the normal open. I'm like, I don't know what people are talking about. Did I miss it? But no. Yeah. And then I saw when I actually went to write it that they had this thing. So
it's very nicely done. And they did. There's a lot of really fun scenes, some scenes and images that you probably recognize because, of course, they are from the movie itself, but it's very, very nice, a nice touching tribute. The last time I remember them doing something like this was when Stan Lee passed, and they did like a montage, did the opening credit montage thing for him. So I thought it was a really, really nice honor, especially since, like I said, the last person was Stan Lee himself.
Sure. Yeah, I thought it was something that they didn't necessarily have to do, but I'm glad that they did do
it. I am too. Huh. Now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James is going to try and stump us with some Disney trivia. James will ask us 4 questions, hopefully a bonus so we can redeem ourselves. We're going to try to answer them, and we will get our correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
No bonus, so no redemption for you, but we'll see how the rest of it goes. Our first question comes from listener Donna S. What year did Walt Disney start animating?
Ooh.
Like animating?
Yep. When did he get his start?
Like professionally?
Yes.
1929 sticks out for some reason. I have absolutely no idea why. It's probably way too early.
Let's do 1917. So he was born in 1901. So 16,
29 would have been okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with 29 then.
Okay. Trust your gut, right?
Yep.
Question number 2 from listener Liberty M. Before Ghirardelli Soda Fountain and Chocolate Shop, what was the viewing attraction in its place?
Oh, that was the Tortilla Factory. I loved that.
That was some excitement.
Oh, yeah,
it was so great because they like made the tortillas and then they like went down the line and then you got a fresh tortilla off the line.
They still have the tortilla.
Do they?
Yeah. Or is that just the bread making now?
They have the sourdough one because it was the sourdough on one side and the tortilla factory on the other side.
I thought they still had the tortillas, though.
I don't think they do.
Okay, I'm going to go with you because I know that they have the bread bowl thing because they supply all the bread bowls for the whole resort.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it was the tortilla factory.
Okay, I will go with you.
Actual name, like
the Mission Tortilla Factory.
Mission Tortilla Factory, okay. Like, I don't remember what the actual name was, but yeah. It's a tortilla factory.
Yeah, Mission Tortilla Factory.
All right, question number 3, according to listener Quincy K, how many audio animatronics are in the Enchanted Tiki Room?
A lot. Oh my gosh. I don't even
start counting. One, two, three, four. You're okay, that's Jose.
One, no, no, no. 100.
Oh.
163. I feel like with these big number ones, we should be like
163? I don't, gosh, I don't know. Because all the flowers, I don't know. All the flowers animatronics. Do the tiki, like, totem pole things count as animatronics?
I'm just asking audio animatronics, so.
I don't know. I don't know if those all
if
count.
Those count, because all they. I would think so, because they go to the music. You said 160 all, what?
163.
I'm going to say 112.
Ooh.
All right, and your final question this week, a multi-answer question. A bit of a story behind it. Walt Disney Company chairman Michael Eisner trumpeted that no one living west of the Mississippi River would escape the marketing blitz for the Indiana Jones adventure. After reviewing all the pieces of Disney's promotional campaign, Disneyland's marketing vice president Michelle Reese upgraded Eisner's assessment to simply no one alive. Can you name some of their big ideas of how they advertised Indiana Jones?
Oh, I know one. They did the Super Bowl.
The Super Bowl?
Yeah, because they had Indiana Jones like come in like for the Super Bowl. It was like the halftime show. Because remember, we even watched a video clip of it.
Yeah, couldn't you get a decoder like in cereal?
Maybe. But I think the Super Bowl is the big thing.
Yeah, that's true. I thought you could get like the decoder in a cereal.
For help with this question, I have a list of six big ticket items.
Six.
So feel free to give me any and all of those or more.
There was also a TV show. They did like a TV special.
Okay. Okay. So we've got decoder in a cereal box. We've got the halftime show. We've got. Pay attention. We've got the.
I don't know anymore. I gave you what it did.
And Tig also said the TV special.
Yeah, TV special. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think James is trying to get all six, are you?
Oh, no. We're just going to see how many points he can
rack
up. Yeah,
no. He just said what is, and then he said he has six.
Get me as many as you can, especially you playing at home.
Got it.
I think we'll leave it there.
Yeah.
So we'll see how the two of them did on all of our trivia after this week's discussion topic.
All right, well, for our discussion topic this week, we have with us yet another former cast member.
Yay!
Yes, I love having cast members on. So again, we'll put out the thing. If there's anybody who's been a cast member and who would love to be on the podcast, please send us an email, feedback@dlweekly.net, and we would be happy to have you on the show. But joining us this week is former cast member Stephanie Fix, and she worked all over the place in Fantasyland. So welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, we are super excited for you to be here. So thank you so much for reaching out and connecting with us.
Absolutely. You guys have a great show. So I wanted to be able to participate and have some fun talking to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. Well, to start things off, we would like to know what your Disney story is. So how did you fall in love with like the brand itself?
Sure.
Or the movies or however it started for you.
Everything Disney.
Yeah.
So I can really credit my Disney story to my late father. He grew up here in Anaheim in the 50s and was able to go to Disneyland on the third day it was open.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And he went, he was a kid. He went by himself. He had a paper route. And so and this is the 50s, you know, so parents didn't really care what their kids were doing back then. Anyway, he rode his bike over there on the third day, paid the dollar to get in, like left his bike like unchained outside of Disneyland. Like, really? You wouldn't do that. There's no way you would do that now.
Right.
But he went in by himself to Disneyland because he had seen it being built on TV, and he'd obviously been by there to see all the construction. So he was this giddy teenage kid who went in on the third day. It was open to the public and just absolutely fell in love with it. Then he kind of dragged, like, I think he dragged my aunt there like a week later, and he just really fell in love with it. And then flash forward to his adulthood. Mm-hmm. He was a mailman here in Anaheim, and his route was near Disneyland. So had a lot of cast members who lived on his route that he got to know. And because of that, we were super lucky and would get signed into the park. when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So we never paid. We never had to pay to get into Disneyland. Yeah. We paid for food and souvenirs mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. But we went about 3 times a year.
Wow.
And I think my memory, I have a photo of me. I look like I'm about 2 maybe in the sure. photo. And it's my mom and my aunt with me in a teacup.
Oh,
they're just holding me up. And I'm this little tiny child. So I have very, very vivid memories of Disney, of just literally growing up there as a child in the 70s.
Wow.
That's amazing. I just can't get over the fact that your dad just rode his bike over there, left his bike outside and was like, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And he was gone the whole day. Nobody even knew where he was or cared or, what? Where'd you go? I don't know. They just, right. I don't know what they thought he was doing. It was a different parenting back then, he's a kid, he's fine. His love for that just kind of translated, and it affected me, obviously, just going as a kid and being there all the time at Christmas. We would usually go 3 times a year. We would go at Christmas all the time. We would mm-hmm. usually go spring break ish, Easter, that mm-hmm. kind of time frame. Yeah. And then of course in the summer we would go. And then we would go also too if we had relatives from out of town. Growing up and living in Anaheim, it's amazing how relatives and friends come out of the woodwork sometimes when you live 10 minutes from the park and people are like, hey, we're coming to town. Oh, hey, let's go to Disneyland. So we would have fun. My sister and I would always be tour guides and there's people coming out from the friends coming out from Midwest or East Coast and oh, hey, kids, go to the park, show these people's kids the park. And so we would do that and just have fun with that. And yeah, we had a great old time. And my dad, since he was a mailman, he was outside all day. And so I kind of got spoiled by this story. Whenever we go to Disneyland, he did not want to wait in line. He'd wait in line for the rides, had no problem with that. But he didn't want to wait in line to eat a hamburger. He said, I don't want to wait in line for a hamburger. I'm coming to Disneyland. There's good food here. We're going to go eat somewhere good. Mm-hmm. So we would always go eat at the Blue Bayou.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Yeah. Nice.
We would have lunch. He would splurge for lunch and we would go eat at the Blue Bayou. And back in those days, they didn't take reservations like they do now.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So when we were kids, rope dropping for us as kids was running over to the Blue Bayou to put our name in for a reservation. That was first on the list. And then we could go on whatever rides we wanted to. But he wanted to sit, he wanted to be served, he wanted to have a meal, and he didn't mind paying for it. So I got a little spoiled as a kid going to Blue Bayou all the time for lunch, which was great. And standing in line for a hamburger, what's that? Because, and again, we didn't pay anything to get in, and we'd mm-hmm. get the ride tickets, we'd get those. So to him, it was the family outing, and hey, I'm gonna spend the money, and I'm gonna sit, I'm gonna have a good meal while I'm here. Because we didn't pay anything to get in.
Well, yeah, if you're not paying for tickets or ride tickets or something like that, then, that's the one thing you could spend on.
Yeah, and then we would come home. We're so close that we would come home in the afternoon and kind of take a nap and chill out. And then we go back later for the parade and fireworks.
That's so cool.
That was really the plan, yeah. So we'd only really eat the one meal in the park. And then we'd go home and just have a little, a light dinner or whatever, and then come back to the park later on. Watch the electrical parade and watch the fireworks.
Now, I'll tell you, Teresa. So Teresa's fiance, Vern, who is also a producer on the show, he is a letter carrier. And so you guys need to move to Anaheim, let him be a letter carrier, get signed in. I don't know if it works quite like that now. But
an extra perk to that job that he probably didn't even realize when he was signed up for. That's pretty amazing. That's really cool.
Yeah, my dad was just a very friendly, outgoing kind of guy, and he would just talk to everybody, and he just made friends with people, and then, oh, yeah, we're going to Disneyland, okay, and then, oh, hey, meet this person, meet that person who's signing us in, okay. So,
that's so wow.
Okay. Cool.
What an awesome perk. Well, when you go to Disneyland, which way do you normally go on your first day? Do you go left towards Adventureland? Do you go forward and go through the castle to Fantasyland? Do you go right towards Tomorrowland? What's kind of your attack plan?
Well, Galaxy's Edge just kind of changed all that now, but just kidding. Actually, I usually go towards Tomorrowland. That is my was my favorite land. It's changed a lot in recent years. Obviously there isn't as much over there, but I got used to going that way as a kid all the time. We would go over that direction because there was so much fun stuff to do over there. So I usually go over there and try to knock out Space Mountain first without having to wait for a fast pass or all that, because the line tends to get really long for that.
That's a popular one.
Yeah. Then I'll make my way over to the rest of the park too.
But, yeah. I mean, it sounds like you were going to the parks when it was kind of the heyday of Tomorrowland when you were younger, because, you know, in the, what was it? The late 60s is when all the movement stuff showed up. So you had like the People Mover and you had the submarine voyage and you had the monorail and just everything was, you know, the rocket jets were up on top. So that was super cool. You know, Tomorrowland was the place.
It was, everything was moving there. Adventure Through Inner Space was there, and I loved geeking out on that ride. Although I do love Star Tours, so at least they replaced it with something good. But
yeah,
but I miss the People Mover. That was just a fun ride. And then of course America Sings. That was one of my favorites as a kid too. Just going in there and just watching the show in there and the Skyway, riding the Skyway.
Oh, I forgot about the Skyway. How could I forget the Skyway?
Autopia, when there were two Autopias. There was Fantasyland and Tomorrowland Autopia. Just two different tracks there, basically.
I will tell you, though, I don't think there's been anybody I've ever talked to that has experienced the People Mover that hasn't liked the People Mover. So I really feel like I know it's never coming back, but
I know
if they could make it come back somehow, if Tinkerbell could put some pixie dust over there and just make it happen.
And it's weird because I've been to Florida and I've been on their version of the People Mover there, and it's just not the same. It just isn't. It's not. It doesn't have the same feel. It's just not the same.
There was something really cool about getting on the People Mover and having the canopy kind of like sit down on top of you, and the fact that you were out in the open, because Disney World's, you're kind of enclosed. You know, there's a roof over it, and I don't know. It was cool. It felt more like you were in your own little pod, even though you were still connected to other cars. And I don't know. Some of the views from there, it was a great, my mom talks about all the time how it was a great, you know, 15 minutes off your feet and just could see a bunch of stuff. I know Teresa hears me talk about the People Mover all the time, and she regrets not being able to have experienced it at some point.
Yeah, no, my first trip to the park, it was not there anymore for me. Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad. I mean, you can watch videos of it. It's definitely not the same thing, but It was a very relaxing ride, and the whole family could go on it. So obviously my mom wasn't into thrill rides and things like that, but she would love the People Mover, and you could just sit down, put your feet up, you could people watch. And then as I got older and I was a teenager and ended up having a pass later on, we'd go on the People Mover and we'd see your friends, you know, we'd be yelling at friends, "Hey, you know, what's going on? Where are you going? You going to Videopolis? Yeah, we'll meet you over there." Yeah. So that was really, really cool to do that. And then, the rocket, I really miss the rocket jets, just having that view up there. And we also used to do things that nowadays would not be safe, but we used to pack people in the rocket jets. I remember getting four of us as teenagers in one rocket jet. Yeah. And I swear they were bigger back then, because like they had to have been bigger back then, but they're not.
You could barely fit one person in
there. I know, right? It's hard to get in and out of those things now. And I think, how on earth did we get four of us in there? Of course, we were a lot smaller then, but still we're like, oh yeah, we used to pack us in there, and the cast members didn't care. We're like, okay, if you can fit, fine.
Well, you know, I tried to explain this to Teresa. We went to Disney World back in August, and one of the attractions that we skipped was the rocket jets, because they had them. They still have them up on top there.
They do.
I tried to tell Teresa that we need to go on it, and she was like, no, like I want to go on this and I want to go on this. And then we just ran out of time. But I tried to tell her, I'm like, I know you think that it's not going to be that exciting, but it's up and all this stuff. And
we skipped it because so it was raining when we were in
Tomorrow. That's true. That's true.
And we moved past. Yeah, then we moved past it, and then we never went back over there.
That's the one attraction that I'm bummed that we didn't get to go on, because we skipped Dumbo because it was raining.
Yeah.
In fact, all of that area was closed.
Yeah.
And we skipped, we skipped Aladdin's Carpets, because they're all the same attraction, right?
Right. Yeah. So it's a spinner ride. Yeah. But the fact that you feel like when you go on the rocket jets, because it's high up, you feel like you might fall out. And that's like the thrill of going on a spinner. Mm-hmm. I don't go on the Astro Orbiter. I think I've been on the Astro Orbiter at Disneyland maybe two or three times. And that was only because somebody else wanted to go. But but having worked Dumbo, I have a whole thing about spinner rides, because spinner rides are the lines are ridiculous. The capacity is so low on a spinner ride. And and when I worked when I worked Dumbo at times during the busy summer season, the line would be about 90 minutes and the ride itself is only 90 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. So I used to joke about 90 minutes for 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. You do the math, you know, do you really want to spend 90 minutes of your life waiting in line for 90 seconds? Like you, it's your choice. If you got a kid and the kid really wants to go, fine, but you're going to be in that line with that kid for 90 minutes. Yeah. So just think about that.
And there's so many other things at Disneyland you could be doing that are so much better. You could do a spinner ride at like anywhere.
Mm-hmm. But people love Dumbo. They love Dumbo.
What is it? The jets, the rocket. Astro
Orbiter.
Astro Orbiter during the fireworks is pretty cool.
Oh, right there by the castle. Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah. But other than that, not a must do.
See, at Disney World, the People Mover during the fireworks is great, because the People Mover goes right by there. Although you only get like 15 seconds of it.
That's true.
Because it's so fast, that People Mover at World moves too fast.
It does. That thing, it
you
should.
You don't get to see things. I actually, last time we were there, I got super lucky. And you know where the model is for Epcot?
Mm-hmm.
Over on the side there, we got stuck there for like 5 minutes, and so I'm zooming in. I'm with my phone, and I'm like, this is so cool. I get to take all these geeked out with like all the pictures of detail on it, because I haven't seen it up close like that.
Yeah,
and you never stop there. You just kind of zoom by and like, oh wait, that's part of the Epcot model. That's part of the Progress City model. Whoops, oops, I missed it.
Right,
and I just geeked out and. Like, what are you doing? Why are you geeking out about this? Yeah, never mind. I'm just geeking out. You don't understand. This is just so cool.
Some people just won't understand.
Yeah.
I know. It's hard.
So speaking of other things that are difficult, if you have to choose one, what is your favorite attraction?
My favorite attraction has to be Space Mountain.
Ooh, that's a good one. The
reason being is that was the first big thrill ride I was tall enough to go on as a kid.
Ah,
that's a good reason.
Yeah, that was brand new, you know, at the time. And I was really into Star Wars and space and all that. So I just loved that ride as a kid, and I still do today.
You know, it just dawned on me that you said that Space Mountain opened about the same time that Star Wars came out. So they kind
it
of
did.
I like never connected that in my head before.
You had to be a kid my age to connect that. But that was very, it was a cool ride. It was the new ride. There hadn't been a new ride at Disneyland in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually tall enough to ride it when it first opened. In fact, my older sister got to ride it. She rode it during like the test phase, like test and adjust phase. Yeah. And my dad kept saying, oh, you're a guinea pig, you know, no. But he let her do it anyway. But I didn't opt in. I think my parents were like, no, you're too little, you know, you can't go on it, whatever.
Sure.
But then when they figured out I was like barely tall enough, I'm like, okay, cool, I'm going on this. So, yeah. So, I mean, I love the classics too. Don't get me wrong. I mean, who doesn't love Pirates and Mansion and those classics? But,
right.
But as far as like the ride, I think that had the most influence on me as a child that I will always love is Space Mountain.
It is magical. We've been talking about this a lot recently, but it's just amazing to me how it's just a roller coaster inside with like music and lights. There's nothing really that amazing. Like, you know, when you really break it down, it's really not that like incredible.
It's not even that Disney of an
attraction. There's not an animatronic.
There's nothing to it. I mean, yeah.
It's so much fun though.
It is. And it's nice because they've done things in recent years with like Ghost Galaxy and the whole the Star Wars overlay, and that was really cool. And Hyperspace Mountain, that was really cool, and I enjoyed that. And I've actually had the opportunity. I had a friend who was a cast member at the time when I worked there, who worked Space Mountain, and I've ridden it with the lights on complete.
Nice. Yeah,
That's like the Disney Holy Grail for us.
Right? Right? But you know what? I'll tell you this. Once you write it like that, you're like, I'm never putting my hands up again. Close for comfort. Yeah.
I do like won't raise my arms over my head, like woo, yeah. As we're going through it. I'm just like,
do you know what does that to me? That one section of Big Thunder. There's one section where the track mm-hmm. dips,
yes,
and you come out of your seat,
mm-hmm.
and I feel like every time I'm like, my hands are going to hit that, but I know that they have, you know, things that they put, and but it's an optical illusion, and your primate brain is just like, no.
Like, so I don't have a death wish. I don't want to lose a finger or a hand or anything.
Yeah. Let's not turn it into not the happiest place on earth.
Right.
Yeah. So Stephanie, you've talked a little bit about being a cast member at the park. So how did that come about? And kind of tell us what your experience was like getting hired on.
Sure. So living and growing up in Anaheim, working at Disney was kind of a rite of passage, really. All of my older cousins worked at Disney at some point. My sister worked at Disney. It was just a thing. This was if you were a teenager in Anaheim in the 80s, this is where you went to work. You tried to get a job at Disney. It was close by. They offered very flexible hours, and the pay wasn't bad for the time period.
Sure, yeah.
And so my older cousin, she had done parade. And then a couple of other cousins did food, and I had one cousin who did storybook as well. She didn't do it for very long. I think she was only there one summer. But for me, it was just a place of, hey, if I'm a kid and I want to get a job, this is where I go. This is one step above babysitting. I'd done that for years. I think I started babysitting when I was 12. I was ready for something different. And so my high school in Anaheim had a program. This was for students who were seniors. You had to be a senior, I believe. And it was, you got credit for school for working at Disneyland. You didn't get paid. So it was more like an internship.
Oh.
And it was a high school program. And what you did was you left school early in the day and you went over to Disneyland and you worked there. And you got all sorts of training there. And then Monday nights, there was a class. And the class on Monday night was an evening class, and we did things like resume writing. We had guest speakers come in from all over the Disney company and come talk to us about
That's
the company.
Cool.
We got to do some really cool things. One thing we got to do was we got to see the dress rehearsal of the full Christmas parade, the big Christmas parade they used to do back in the day.
Yeah.
We were the only people on Main Street watching this rehearsal of the parade, because the park used to close early on Monday nights back then. Mm-hmm. So Monday nights were the time when the park was empty in the evenings. So we got tours of the park too. We got to go up on top of the Matterhorn, like up go up the rickety elevator, see the see the basketball court, which yes, it exists, go up there. So that was really cool. And then again, we had all these Imagineers. We would have somebody from the sound department come talk to us. We had custodial come talk to us. So just different parts of the company and really get to know the company. We would do mock interviews, practice our job skills. We would talk about what happened on the job. We would share stories of, oh yeah, this guest came up to me and was asking me this and how did you handle this? And so it was really a great opportunity to get some job experience and learn how to deal with guests and learn about the company. And of course we went through all the Disney University training. Mm-hmm. So that was fun.
What an awesome experience. It seems like they were really trying to get you guys a lot of practical experience to not necessarily work at Disney, but just to go out and get a job somewhere. That's so cool.
It really was.
Yeah. The thing that I like when you first started, I was like biting my tongue. I'm like, just let her finish. But I was just like, you know, where I grew up in rural Wisconsin. We had work study programs, but it was nothing. Like, I can't even wrap my head around being a teenager and like getting to go work at Disneyland for mm-hmm. like for a class
for school, like that's for just, school credit.
Yeah.
And it was awesome because I was a senior and we were, I was like done. I was ready for college.
Mm-hmm.
Already my senior year, I was bored. And it was great because I would leave school at noon and then go over to Disney and start working.
That's incredible.
And I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And I didn't care that I wasn't getting paid. I was getting high school units for it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that program was like a semester long program. And at the end of that program, I got hired.
Oh,
which, very cool.
Which that's kind of the goal, is to hire students, you know, yeah, to work. And so I got to work that whole Christmas season, yeah, being a brand new hire. Now, the thing is that normally for attractions, you have to be 18 to work attractions.
Sure.
I was barely 17. I was like, my birthday's in September. So I turned 17 in September that year.
Wow.
And then started working at Disney that December.
Wow.
So I was super young, but I had already been trained. I had already been working. I knew all the crew over at Storybook, because that's where I was working. They knew me. Everybody trusted me. They knew I knew what I was doing. And that's how I got hired.
Wow. That's amazing.
And my interview was crazy, because I'd already gone through the whole process and I didn't really have to go through the whole interview process that Disney normally does.
Sure.
They're like, okay, you want a job? Yeah. Okay. Here, sign here. Sign here. Like, okay.
Now, when you started doing this with Disney, did you have an area that you wanted to work? Did you want to work attractions, or did you not care where you worked? Or
when I started, I really didn't care where I worked. I was just lucky to get into, I was just happy to be in the program. Mm-hmm. And actually, they put you in two locations to start with this program. They put me in foods first. I was working at a restaurant that's no longer there. It was called the Town Square Cafe. It used to be the old Egg House on Main Street, kind of where Showcase is now, over in that kind of that area there. And they had me there as a hostess, and I didn't really like it there. I could never be a waitress. I mean, thank God for people who are servers, because I just can't do it.
Yeah.
it's just not me. But I was a hostess, and so I sat people, and it was just kind of boring, and just watching people eat their food and disgusting and ugh, you know. And then I would change and go over to Storybook. So I don't know why they kind of placed people, and I don't know why I got placed over at Storybook, because I was the only one over there. I had another friend who got to go work Haunted Mansion, which was really cool.
Very cool.
And I was a little envious of that at first, but then I realized that, hey, maybe they put me over here because I'm an extrovert and I like talking to people.
Sure.
And they felt that I would be okay with that. And I was, and that was great, because I was kind of shy as a kid, but then I kind of came out of my shell later on.
Well, so, Disney, I think, is a great place to come out of your shell, because you're definitely dealing with a lot of people and a lot of different types of people. And
yeah, so I got to work on Storybook. And back then, when you started in attractions in Fantasyland, if you were female, now mind you, at the time, there was only females working on Storybook. There were no guys over there. It was a team of all women working over there. You did not have guys till later on, till after I left, really.
And Jungle
was all guys. You did not have females. Yeah. You did not have. And even when Jungle started having women over there, the women were only like loading and unloading boats. They weren't skippers yet.
Really?
Yeah. It took them a while to get them trained. Yeah.
They had a lot of that old school kind of, you know, this is like telling stories on a boat is more of a woman's job, you know, being an adventurer on the river is more of a man's job.
Yeah. And we always wondered, like, why is that? Why can't I go over and work on Jungle Cruise?
Yeah.
I actually did do one. Okay. So the Storybook break room was always a hotbed of activity, because there was this whole crew of young women over there.
Sure.
So everybody would come over. Our break room was one of the busiest break rooms at the park, because everybody would come over there.
And where was this? Where was this break room?
It's right behind where the boat storage is. So,
okay.
Yeah. It's you go through there, and it's in the back. So that's where our break room was, and there's lockers and there was stuff back there for us. But that was a hotbed, because custodial would be back there. We had the Matterhorn mountain climbers that were all guys. Those guys would come over there. We'd have the bussers from like Big Thunder Ranch coming over and trying to meet girls. And the maintenance guys were always over there, apparently for no reason, because like, what are you doing over here? Go fix something.
Yeah.
and then we would get the guys from Jungle, which were way out of their league being over on that side of the park.
Oh, yeah.
But the guys from Jungle would come over because, again, there's all dudes over there. They want to come meet some women. So there was a lot of that activity going on. There was always something happening and people looking, oh, you know, who's working today? And, you know, what time are you off? You know, this kind of stuff. But
it was like the club or something.
Yeah.
it was like to meet people, the social.
Right.
Club.
It was like the match.com version. the storybook break room. Ooh, what's going on in here?
One of the
guys who worked Jungle was constantly coming over and talking to us and everything. And there was one night he came over and he said, oh yeah, our lead went home sick. And so I don't know how, but I convinced him that girls needed to work on a Jungle Cruise. And so he said, well, why don't you come over when you get off?
Wow.
So I went over to the Jungle Cruise. And of course, he did the steering and did the gun and everything too. But I did the spiel. I was obviously in street clothes. I wasn't in my storybook. But, you know, I'm like, hey, it's Safari Stephanie and we're aboard, you know. And I did the whole thing just like kind of from memory or just making stuff up. And it was so cool. I'm like, oh, I wish I could work over here. This would be so cool.
Oh, how fun.
But yeah, it was late at night. And I mean, you get fired for that now. But it was back then. It wasn't as big of a deal.
You know, that's what we hear from cast members all the time is how it seemed like things were a lot more loose and fun back in the day. And now it's like everything that most people did when they worked there is like you'd get fired for it now. It's like, man.
We had rules. We had safety things. We had protocols and things we had to follow, but there was just a lot of things that you could just get away with and not worry about getting fired for.
Sure. Yeah.
And I think it's just, I think rules have changed, laws have changed things.
Yeah.
The park has changed. Management's changed. So it's definitely different. I have a couple of friends who are still cast members, some 30 plus years.
Oh, wow.
And
wow.
It's just a lot different now. And I'm glad that I'm not part, like I had so much fun working there. I don't know that I'd be able to deal with some of these rules and regulations. And it just takes the fun out of certain things. So, yeah.
So tell us about being a, are you what a tour guide or is it a guide for Storybook? What is that? What is that role called?
The technical term was attractions hostess.
Oh, a hostess. There you go.
But we used to call ourselves storytellers.
Yeah, I like that.
Even this is, you know, you can't really say this now, but storybook girls. It was okay. Back then it was okay to call us girls, even though we were technically, you know, obviously we were women and ladies. But, oh, I'm a storybook girl. And that was an acceptable thing to say back then.
Sure.
So we were storytellers and, you know, the duties varied between what you were doing. You weren't always on a boat all the time. I had the luxury. I'm an early bird. I still get up very early in the morning and I'm very productive in the morning, which drives people crazy. But, but I usually worked opening shifts at Storybook. I loved to work the opening shifts and it was fun because nobody was in the park and I got to take the first boat around with our lead and check and make sure all the things are working and nothing, little boats aren't loose or props aren't missing or stuff isn't going on in the water and there's no trash. There's nothing. So we did that. And then in the morning, you know, Storybook is not the hotbed e-ticket ride that people run to and get in line for. So the first hour working there was a lot of fun because it wasn't crowded yet. And you could talk to the people in line. So if you were working the dock, I would walk up and down the dock and I would talk to people and say, oh, you know, welcome. How's it going? Where are you from? And I always had guidebooks in our little, we had a little stand by the little phone and everything in the front there. And I'd always grab extra guidebooks and stuff and make sure that people, oh, do you know the parade is at 3 o'clock or whatever? Oh, did you check this out? All this and that. So I would try to be informative and talk to people and give them information. Oh, where's the bathroom? Okay, it's over here.
I'm sure that's like your number one question.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And Storybook, the way that the dock is set up there, it's pretty easy for people to just kind of just cruise on into the dock. Like not be in the line, but to just kind of cut through. And we used to get, obviously, the any kind of wheelchair party would come through there. But we would get just guests, just random guests coming, asking us a question because they'd see us standing there and they'd just come in. And so we were kind of like the information zone before. Mm-hmm. Now they have the guest relations has their info booth set up around the park. But mm-hmm. that didn't used to be the way it was. Mm-hmm. It was much different back then, especially after they got rid of the ticket tellers, because that's where the people would go for information. But we would talk to the guests, and then we would rotate. So you were either on the dock for a while, and then you would hop a boat and take a boat around, and you'd take a boat around twice, and then you'd hop the boat behind you, and you'd take the boat around twice, and then you'd go on a break. And then you'd come back, you'd work the dock for like 15, 20 minutes, and then you'd hop a boat. So it was a rotational kind of thing. And I liked working the dock because it was fun, and I got to talk to people, and you know, there's a little bit more responsibility on the dock if something goes wrong.
Sure.
Yeah. Of course, but, and stuff does, but it was fun. And then once you get people on the boat, the thing that I loved about Storybook is it could be 100 degrees outside and people have been waiting in line, but guess what? When they sit down and they get on a boat, they chill out. even if it's hot, mm-hmm. they stop being grouchy. They just chill out, and you're calmly talking to them. Welcome to Storybook Land. Ooh, we're going to be swallowed by Monstro. And they sit and they relax, which is really cool.
How many people can fit on a boat?
How many legally or?
I mean, I guess we're talking about the late 80s, early 90s. So, I mean, I guess as many as you could get on there. You know?
So technically, you can put 12 people on a Storybook boat. Back in the day, though, they used to let kids sit up on the very front, like the bow of the boat in the front. And then on the top of the boat where the cast member is, we could put kids up there too. It was okay to do that. It's also okay for kids to sit on a lap, like to lap sit. Mm-hmm. So it's about 12. Again, in the summertime, you don't want to get too many people in there because it's hot and you're obviously sitting next to each other. But there were times when we were required to do counts. To actually count how many people went through the line. We had little clickers on us. And so we were instructed to pack the boats more. So we would get creative on, okay, we're, hey, let's put this kid over here. Okay. You sit crisscross and you sit this way. And okay. So we would get creative with that. And then the best boat I ever had that had, I believe the count was 24 people.
Holy cow.
Which is double. It was this Italian family. Unfortunately, it was one of the bigger, was the largest boat in the fleet that I was on, thank goodness. But this Italian family, they didn't speak any English at all. And they all insisted on getting on the same boat. And so I said, okay. So we had kind of teenagers kind of lap sitting and adults and kids. And I was barely on the boat. I didn't even know.
And you're hanging off the back.
that boat was dragging when we came around the last corner. And on Storybook, even if you have guests who don't speak English, you're still required to do the spiel.
Sure, yeah.
So they didn't understand anything I was saying. So I just kind of did a modified spiel. I wasn't talking the whole time, but I was pointing at things. And boy, when we got to Pinocchio, they got all excited about Pinocchio. Oh, Pinocchio! They got all excited, and they started singing and clapping in Italian as we were coming through the last that bridge there by where Casey is, and then mm-hmm. the boat storage off to the left hand side. They started singing, and they're like, da, 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 and they're just clapping and laughing, and everybody on the dock is just staring at me like, what is going on? And they were just having the time of their lives, and they were so thankful, and they all got off the boat, and they all shook my hand, and they were just this happy family, and it's like, oh, this is so sweet, you know?
What a fun trip around for you.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
I feel like if I was on the dock and that came out, I'd be like, I'll be on her boat.
Yeah.
It seemed like her boat was having a good time.
That's the fun boat.
Yeah. And I just let them do their thing. You know, what are you going to do? They're having fun. They insisted on everybody getting in. Okay, come on in. So
every time I go on Storybook, And I don't know if it's because things have changed and they're like super cautious about people like getting hurt on it or whatever. But I feel like every time I get on it, every time I step in the thing, I feel like the thing moves quite a bit.
It does move
and
a bit,
because yeah. they're always like, watch your step. And they put mm-hmm. one person on the close side and one person on the far mm-hmm. side. And they're trying to keep it balanced. So it's kind of funny hearing this story because I just think like, oh, that sounds like that sucker's going to tip over.
You know, the boats are they actually are pretty unstable on the dock. And you have to remember, now there's actually a railing there on the dock that you can hold, the cast member can hold on to, guests can hold on to that railing getting in and out. That did not exist when I worked there. It was literally just the kind of the gate and the fence where the queue is. Mm. And then it was just open. The dock was open.
Wow.
So it was very difficult. I mean, I'll tell you, I had great thighs when I worked there. I know that's probably TMI, but I.
Yeah, because basically you were holding the boat.
Yeah,
to the
you're
dock.
putting 1 foot inside the boat. Yeah. You're putting another one on the dock and you're mm-hmm. literally balancing it. And then you're helping people in and out of the boat. And wow. we were not allowed to lift anybody into the boat for assistance. We were only allowed to offer like our hand.
Sure.
Sure.
But I had one older lady who grabbed, she had these acrylic nails and she grabbed my forearm.
Oh no.
And dug her nails into my, I was bleeding.
Oh no.
It hurt so much. And I just had to sit there and smile. Yeah, I couldn't be like, oh, you're hurting me. Mm-hmm. But I just had to hold it in and not say anything. And then I hopped on the boat. And then by the time I get back, I need to go on a break. My arm is bleeding here.
Oh my gosh.
And I had to fill out an incident report about it too, because, you know, in case I got infected or, you know, but, yeah, those boats are pretty unstable. Back in the day, too, we had the green cushions. I don't know if you remember the green cushions that used to go. Now you sit, you just sit in the boat and there's no comfort whatsoever. But there used to be these green cushions that we would put down for the guests to sit on. And getting the cushion down on the last part where people enter the boat, getting that cushion down was always a challenge, too, because those people had to remain standing. You had to get the cushion in and then have them sit down.
Oh,
mm-hmm. The cushions, I'm glad they did away with the cushions while they were comfortable. There were a lot of incidents with the cushions. For example, sure. with children and bathroom problems.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that was, this is kind of disgusting, but in the summertime when people are wearing short shorts mm-hmm. and they sweat
oh,
on
yeah.
the cushions mm-hmm. and they get up and there's just like the sweat stain there.
Yeah.
So we always had paper towels and would clean. I would, the other thing is if your boat was sitting out in the sun for a minute after everybody exited and you were waiting to load, the cushions would get hot.
Oh,
so we were constantly flipping all the cushions over so that somebody wouldn't sit down and burn themselves on on the cushion. But there were times when we'd have to run back and get a clean cushion because a kid peed on it.
Yeah.
Or there's just a really disgusting sweat stain. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, no, this is because this needs to go back and get professionally cleaned by custodials.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I have to ask, how often, because like Tag mentioned, when you get on these boats, they are mm-hmm. not, they don't feel super stable. Mm-hmm. Was it common or not so common for people to maybe go overboard or to tip the boat when entering and exiting? Because it seems like they make a pretty big deal about,
I mean, somebody must have, right, to make the big deal.
Normally when anybody would get in the water on the dock, it would normally be a little kid. So a foot would go in, that kind of thing. And not all the way to the bottom, but just like kind of between the boat and the dock.
Ooh, that could be.
So, well, yeah, but you know, they're little. So it wasn't so bad. So there'd be an occasional, you know, dip of the foot in the water kind of thing, or, you know, close to the water. So that was mostly what would happen, but you did get people kind of getting in the boat and kind of like falling forward almost, like kind of falling into their seat.
Oh, sure.
You get a little bit of that going on. The thing with the boats is you have to absolutely, when they tell you, when you first get into a boat and they tell you to go on the dock side and sit there, you have to listen to that, because if you go on the other side, then the boat tips away from the dock. And that's problematic.
I don't want that.
So that's why they tell you, they will instruct you to get in the boat and sit on that that dock side there.
So the other thing that we get instructed a lot, it seems like, is at the end where they say, mm-hmm. all right, everybody stand up on three. One, two, three. And everybody has to stand up. That's part of the same reason.
It's the exact same reason. And I have a great story about that one.
Oh.
This happened to me. It has happened to other people. But again, this would not have happened had the railing been there. Because if the railing been there, this wouldn't have happened. But I was on a boat. This was in the middle of January, and it was cold for Southern California temperatures, which probably meant it was in the 50s here. And I was on a boat. I was in my, we had these long coats that we used to wear. Now remember, our costumes back then were the little culottes. They were blue culottes, and they had we had to wear the white socks, the white knee socks. Ooh. Up to our knees. And so these were open. So there was exposure there to the cold.
Yeah.
And so we used to actually wear underneath in the wintertime, we used to wear long johns like long underwear mm-hmm. underneath these things. And then our big coats over so that nobody could see what we were wearing underneath. Yeah. Because it would get cold out there. And when when that Casey Jr. train comes around, oh, it's like a wind tunnel. It gets cold. It gets downright cold out there. Anyway, I was working, and I wasn't feeling fantastic when I went to work. I probably should have stayed home, but I'm like, oh, I'll just take some cold medicine and I'll be fine.
Sure.
And I actually was. I got to work. I was working outside. It was fine. Well, I was on a boat and again asked everybody to stand up at once, and everybody stood up. So I started getting off the boat mm-hmm. and a woman on the other side of the boat, like, sat down.
Oh no.
Thanks, lady.
The boat went one way and I went the other way.
Oh no.
And so my left leg went between the boat and the dock.
Oh,
like, wow.
Up to I hit my tailbone. I had a bruised tailbone from that. Yeah, but fortunately, I don't know, thank God I was young then. I don't know how I did this. I still try to like recreate this in my mind and I can't. Somehow I kind of hit the deck and just rolled right out of it, because what happened was everybody saw that I got, you know, that I missed the dock essentially mm-hmm. and went into the water, and they tried to lunge for me, which meant that the boat was going to up again, ooh. Which means I could have broken something.
Right.
So I don't know how I did some kind of like ninja move where I just like dropped and rolled. I don't even know how on earth I pulled that off. And so I'm sitting on the dock and I'm kind of with my hands behind me and my knees out in front, and I'm just like breathing. Yeah. Okay, I'm okay. I'm just wet, you know.
Wow.
And then all I ended up with was a bruised tailbone, which wasn't bad. It wasn't bad at all. But that was scary. And there were multiple times when that happened too. So cast members, one summer, oh boy, this is a doozy. One summer we had this cast member. I don't know, this woman was, I don't know, I just don't know. She was adjusting she was on the boat and she was adjusting her microphone as she was going into Monstro.
Oh.
And then she stood up.
Uh-oh.
And there's no clearance there. The Monstro is, you have to duck inside Monstro.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And she hit her head on top of Monstro, like on his kind of like behind his tooth sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she hit her head. She fell backwards off of the boat, and she was hanging by her microphone. Now, mind you, water and, you know, a microphone.
Yeah.
Not a good combination here. Fortunately, one of the guys on the boat figured out how to stop the boat. And so we then hopped on a boat at the dock and got out there, pulled her out of the water, and then reversed the boat back to get her back to shore. Ooh. But I hopped her boat to take her boat around.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I'm Stephanie. I'm your new storybook skipper.
Nothing to see here. Nothing to see.
Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing, absolutely, absolutely nothing to see here. But yeah, that was downright dangerous. Yeah. And when we pulled her out, the storybook is, you know, the water looks disgusting, and it is dyed, obviously, that color, so you don't mm-hmm. see the track. But it's not exactly clean. You know?
Right, so, right. They're not cleaning it out every hour.
There's mm-hmm. algae and there's just stuff in there. So there was algae on this woman when we pulled her out.
It was gross.
Yeah, she was fine. No big deal. But again, just falling off the boat and hitting her head and just falling off. And I don't know if she just stumbled or what, but don't do that. Do not be adjusting. You adjust your microphone before you start. You don't do that when you're in the whale. So yeah, she had a nice bump on her head. And after that, they moved her to a different ride. They did not let her work any longer.
Sure, that probably sounded like a good idea.
Yeah. 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 We had, you know, it's amazing what happens out there on the canal too. Baby ducks are everywhere. And they sometimes they don't get out of the way. And one time I had, this is a terrible story for a child who saw this, but there was a big hawk that came out of nowhere and just came down and just grabbed a baby duck and took off. And I'm like, okay, let's just not say anything about that.
You're like, what Disney movie can I turn this into? That was the evil queen coming down.
Right. And I'm head over to the left. We have.
Yeah.
Just going on with it. I just had to keep smiling and just keep going on.
Pay no attention to the thing that just happened over there. Over here.
This is bad too. So I had, speaking of the water on Storybook, there was a time when I had a woman, I'm not sure what country she was from. If she had spoken Spanish, I probably could have communicated in my broken Spanish, but I think she was Middle Eastern or something. But anyway, she was on the boat and she took her kid's baby bottle and she started rinsing it out the water and Storybook. And I'm like, oh no, 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 no. So when we got off the ride, I tried to explain to her, no, bad, you know, throw it away kind of thing. So fortunately, she understood me and I was like, oh my gosh.
You're like, do you not see that the water is green?
Yeah, no, please don't.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It was gross. And then, I had a woman try to change her baby on the front part of the boat one time. She's trying to change her kid's diaper on the front of the boat.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I stopped the boat.
Bad.
This is not happening on my boat. Like, not under my watch is she changing this kid's diaper on this boat.
Wow.
So I literally stopped the boat and I'm like,
well, and like, how dangerous? What if the kid, I don't know, slips or something?
Yeah.
You know, like,
it was just on the front of the boat, but she's just like, oh, perfect place to like change the kid's diaper.
Yeah.
And depending on the person, I feel like it also could have been a wrap up the diaper and overboard.
Yeah, that would have been bad too. People drop things in the water all the time too.
I believe it.
Yeah.
I know cell phones weren't really a thing when you worked there, but I'm sure that lots of cell phones have ended up in the water.
Oh, I'm sure they have. Yeah. Cell phones weren't a thing, but you know, what was a thing back then was the kids spitting from the Skyway.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
That was a nice transition.
Right? I'm telling you guys all the bad stuff. But we didn't have cell phones, we didn't have radios, we had nothing on our boats. It was just us. Mm-hmm. So when we had to communicate of whether there was a spitter on the Skyway, we basically had to kind of signal Casey Jr. and tell him, like, you know, red number 22 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then we knew all the guys who worked at Skyway on both sides, either Tomorrowland or Fantasyland. So they would call over at Tomorrowland Skyway and say, hey, you know, spitter's on number, bucket number, or whatever, you know, so they'd catch them on the other side.
Dang.
So that was always fun to catch those kids. I never got, fortunately, as many times as I was out there, I did not get spit on. I got my boat, the back of my boat did. They missed me and they got the back of my boat, but they did not get me. But we had ladies who did, who had to go back and change or had to go, you know, wash it out of their hair kind of thing. Did have that, or ketchup packets, creamers, the little individual creamers. Those would get thrown over a lot too.
How gross.
Yeah.
It was. And it was just like the, you know, because we were so close, we'd go right under the Skyway.
Yeah.
Right underneath.
Yeah.
There's nothing. We're so close. And so it would just happen right there.
Well, dang. The stupid thing was, that's like right at the beginning / the end of it. It's like you would think you'd wait a little bit.
They didn't care. They were kids. Yeah. You know, they just didn't care.
Yeah.
So What was your, did you have like a favorite scene or a favorite part of Storybook, or did you love it all equally?
I pretty much loved it all equally, but I did have a favorite part working in the, I mostly work days, but when I work the evenings, I'll tell you, one of the best places to see the fireworks is on a boat on Storybook Land. Because the fireworks go off right in the back there.
Yeah.
It's very loud. I know they've changed the launch site of the fireworks a little bit with Galaxy's Edge and things like that. But it's an amazing view. And what we do on Storybook is we get to a point in, if the fireworks start, we get to a point in the ride where we can stop and watch the fireworks. And we stop spieling and you stop the boat and you just enjoy the fireworks.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And one of the best places is to watch the fireworks over the Cinderella castle that's in Storybook, because then you're getting the castle and you're getting the fireworks literally right above you.
Yeah.
And it's loud out there because it's very quiet because you don't have all the people around you. Hear all the noise and all this. You don't have kids with, now with iPads in front of you, blocking your view on their dad's shoulders walking. You don't have that. It's very peaceful and tranquil out there.
Until it explodes.
Yeah. And then, but it's nice because you're kind of by yourself. You're kind of like, hey, we're just these like 12 people out here on this boat.
That's pretty cool. That is really cool.
I would always tell people when they get on the boat, I liked working the fireworks during parade. A lot of times they would shut down, not all the boats, but they would take a lot of the boats off and only have like one or two boats running. And then they'd send everybody out to work the parade. Mm-hmm. And I actually liked hanging back because I liked seeing that fireworks. I wanted to see the show from the boat and I got to enjoy it just as much as the guests did. And I would always pick a good spot. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get past this. This tree blocks it for the people in the front. I'm going to get right here. Here's my spot. Nobody better come up behind me because I'm parking it here.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think when they did that renovation of the parade route where they did the Small World Mall there, I think I feel like, and correct, anybody listening, I guess, correct me if I'm wrong, but don't they now like close Storybook during the parades because it's just not enough room?
They do, and it's sad. It's sad that they close it because you can't get to see that view anymore.
Yeah,
which is a bummer. But they do because the line kind of just sticks out there, and the floats can't get by. They would shut it down pretty much when I worked there and send everybody out to parade, but they didn't close it completely. We'd have one or two boats going.
Sure.
And that was great because people could still go on it if they wanted. Now the line was always very short because people didn't think we were open.
Yeah.
But we were.
One question I had regarding like the different scenes. Mm-hmm. So more recently than when you worked there, they have added, of course, Arendelle towards kind of the end. I did not experience Storybook prior to Arendelle Castle being there. So what used to be in that section?
What used to be there was the three mills from the old mill from the old Silly Symphony.
Yeah.
The problem with those is nobody knew what that was.
Sure.
Nobody had seen it. So when I started working there, I was very curious as to what those were too, because I didn't know what they were. And I went to my public library and researched this because I wanted to know, I wanted information. I wanted to be able to tell the guests what this was. And so my spiel was a little bit different when we got there. And I would explain about, it was a test and it was multiplane camera test for Snow White and when it was done. And I would just tell all these things about it because I wanted to know of what is this? It's just these mills sitting here. Like, this is boring.
There's got to be more to this than
gotta
just
be more.
Mills.
There's got to be more to this than mills. But I'm glad that they did update it. I don't know what happened to the mills. I'd be curious to see what happened to the mills.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they updated it with new stories and put a little bit more modern twist on it, which is nice.
They've been doing that because I'm just thinking, you know, they added the lamp in the tunnel. Mm-hmm. They added, of course, Agrabah at the end there. They added Arendelle, like we said. They added the Little Mermaid as you're going out.
Yeah. Oh, the Little Mermaid.
In fact, did they add that when you were there?
No, that was after all these additions that you see now are all after I worked there. So Toad Hall used to be where Agrabah is.
Oh.
Toad Hall Toad Hall was right there, and now they've moved it to closer to the end there.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't get rid of it totally.
That's true.
No, with still having the attraction in Disneyland, I don't think they would. Sure. Now, had that been World, they probably would have said, "We don't have Toad Hall anymore."
See ya, bye.
But yeah, I think it's good that they've added that, and I think the Frozen section is amazing. I think they've done wonders with it. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful, fun ride. I hope they don't ever get rid of it. I know there's always talk of expansion and how much room that takes up and how many cast members it takes to run. And it's
but you know what though, I'm looking at a Google satellite view right now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm looking at how much space this actually. Like it takes up a good amount, right? But the other thing is it's a great use of space because you've got like three attractions right there. You've got Dumbo mm-hmm. that kind of weaves into it. Mm-hmm. You've got the actual canal boats. And then of course you've got Casey Jr. So really if you took that out, you would get rid of at least two attractions.
Right.
So I don't know. I feel like stuff like this where you can have layers, I feel like is a really great use of that.
And it's kind of stuffed into a corner. You would have to get rid of everything behind that area. If they did something where the magical map stage is over there and they expanded Fantasyland, mm-hmm. maybe out that direction, I could see that happening. But I really hope they don't get rid of it because it's one of the original attractions. Yeah. Walt loved that attraction. He was very pleased with it. It's just a nice, relaxing family ride that doesn't have to be this big adventure, that doesn't have to be this thrill ride, and kids love it, and adults like it too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you want the thrill, go ride Casey Jr. because there's that little hill in the back.
Teresa thinks
I'm crazy, but if you ride in the last car on that sucker, mm-hmm. you get whipped around in there, man.
You do, and that's my favorite. Speaking of that, that's my favorite car to ride in on Casey Jr. I don't want to hit my head getting in one of those stupid monkey cages. I'm like, I'll go ride in the back. I'll wait for the next one. And I mean, I'm not going to push a little kid out of the way to get on it. I mean, I might have done that in my younger days, but not anymore. but I love riding back there, and I still, you know, to this day, I still love going on Storybook. And people ask me sometimes, this is a random question, but people say, how many times did you take around Storybook?
Sure.
And I've kind of done kind of calculations in my head of, okay, if I worked an 8-hour shift, this is probably how many times I went, how many. And so roughly, this is just a rough mm-hmm. guesstimate. If I had to guesstimate, I would say 5,000 times.
Wow.
So how many times a day on average do you think you would go around?
It depends on what kind of shift you're working. But in an average hour, you're going around probably about four times.
Okay.
Maybe longer. It depends on breaks, lunches, all of that.
Sure.
But it's a 7-minute trip around the canal, roughly. Again, sometimes, and that's a good thing too, because on dark rides, your Mr. Toad, your Peter Pan, the rides will break down if people are too slow getting out mm-hmm. or getting in. Mm-hmm. You're on a time thing. On Storybook, somebody could take their time getting in and out of the boat. So if you had a disabled person and they just needed more time, you could take the time to do that, so you weren't as rushed as you were on the dark.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that was more relaxing to me to be able to be helpful and make sure people were on safe before we launched the boat and make mm-hmm. sure no fingers are outside the boat.
How are those boats powered? Are they like, is there like a little engine on them or don't even know.
They're battery powered.
Oh,
yeah, there's a big battery, and when they go back in the back, there's battery chargers back there.
Oh.
And so you basically plug them in and they charge, and they hold their charge. I believe it was about 6 hours.
Dang.
That's not bad.
That's not bad. And then so we'd flip the boats around. So you'd put like your first boats that were out in the morning, you'd swap them out around lunchtime and then recharge them again, and then they'd be able to come back out again at night. So you always had some boats charging, and then you had more boats out on the canal.
Wow. And, I didn't know that.
I had a boat die one time. That was fun.
Oh no. Oh no.
I told my lead, I said, this boat is really running slow. And she's like, no, 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 it's fine. It's only been on for, you know, this time. I'm like, okay.
Famous last words.
Right. Famous last words. And I got stuck. And of course, when you get stuck and you don't have a radio, you have no comunicado whatsoever.
Yeah,
you don't even have a whistle to like, hey. So I had to just sit there, and then they kind of figured out, hey, wait, where's Stephanie? She's not coming in. So then what you do, and we had to do this several times, you send out a boat in reverse and you basically get a tow rope and you got to tow the boat in.
Mm.
So we were rescued. And of course, once we were rescued and we came around the dock, you know, the whole dock is applauding and all the maintenance guys are out there. Everybody's like applauding. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. You know, so then we have to pull the boat off and obviously exit the guests and then pull the boat off and charge it and all that and stuff too, but I was on the and you know, the thing is you're stuck there and the guests are just, I'm like, it's okay, they're gonna come and get us and this is okay and this, how you know, you just have smile and be happy.
Teresa's like, miss, I want to be on an in-show exit of something. Did you ever think of in-show exit for Storybook Land?
I did not think of that. It's a little different of an exit.
We didn't, because you would just basically have to move a guest from one boat to another were to happen, or just again just tow the boat back.
That makes sense.
We never had a boat sink. Now we did have boats. Thank goodness. We did have boats. So they don't do this anymore, but they used to be fully operational in the rain.
Oh, and
there was one year where we had some torrential rains where we were taking buckets and literally we were bringing the boats back and literally bailing them out in the back because they were taking on water from the canal, but from the so much rain.
Jeepers. Wow.
Yeah. It's scary. They don't. So they close. Storybook closes in the rain. The teacups absolutely have to close in the rain. That is so slippery. Oh my goodness.
I bet.
The teacups. I slipped one time on the teacups and I, fortunately I caught myself. I caught a handle on one of the cups. held myself and I didn't go down. Teacups and then, I have a good Dumbo rain story. This is a good one. So I had barely started working there. I think this was the first winter season that I worked there. And it's raining, not hard, but a little bit more than a sprinkle, but we were still open. And this woman and her probably 7 or 8 year old daughter are about to get on Dumbo. And she looks at me and she's like, it's all wet. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of raining outside.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm sorry. Well, we don't have time to dry out all the Dumbos in between cycle.
Yeah. Well, so probably by the time you dry them all off,
they're going to be wet again. You know, right. Right. So she's just like, oh, okay, whatever, fine. So she gets in the Dumbo and she buckles up her seatbelt, and Dumbo has two positions on Dumbo. At least we did back then. And there's, because of the way it's designed, the person in the booth launching Dumbo can't see the Dumbos directly behind them because of the center. So there's another person. There's a mirror, but you just have to have another human being over there.
Sure. Yeah.
So I'm doing belts and I'm checking and everything's fine. And I'm about to give the thumbs up to the person in the booth to launch Dumbo. All of a sudden, this woman busts out an umbrella and pops up an umbrella on Dumbo.
Lady, you realize we're going to start going and that thing's going to rip right out of your hand.
Oh, my gosh. So I tell the person in the booth, I'm like, hold, don't go. I run over there and he can't see what's going on. He can't see anything going on. And I run over there and I'm like, excuse me, ma'am, this is Dumbo the Flying Elephant. And 2 seconds, we're going to be airborne, and that umbrella is going to go flying, and it's gonna perhaps, you know, hit somebody like your child here.
Yeah.
And she was basically refusing to put down the dang umbrella.
Oh.
And I thought, oh my God, no way. And I said, well, I'm really sorry. You're going to either have to put the umbrella down or you're going to have to step out of the Dumbo. This is not happening here.
Right.
And so finally fine. Okay. Whatever. So finally she puts the umbrella down. Now I get back to the booth and the gentleman who's working the booth is an older gentleman. His name was Ernie, and Ernie was like a retired army guy who started working in the park when he was, I don't know, he started working there in like the late 50s. I don't even know when he started. Sure. He'd been there for years and he had a mouth on him. He was not exactly your Disney, your friendly neighborhood Disney cast member. And I get in the booth and he's all, what the hell was that all about?
You're like,
what were you doing out there? And no. And he's kind of like chewing into me of like, why'd I take so long?
You're killing our capacity.
Right. And I told him what happened and he goes, next time that happens, you tell me, I'll go tell her where to put that umbrella, you know? And then he looks at me and he says, how old are you, kid? And I said, 17. And he goes, you did a good job. And I'm like, okay. People were scared to work with him because he kind of had this mean. And then on breaks, he's back there like cursing and chain smoking, like so not Disney.
Yeah.
But he liked me because he saw what was, you know, I told him what was going on with that woman and this and that. And he goes, and you told her that. You told her that Dumbo the Flying Elephant is going to be airborne and she needs to put that umbrella or she needs to get out. I'm like, yeah, I said it nicely, but yeah, that's what I told her.
too funny.
I feel like I'd be like him. I'd be like, just tell me, I'll go kick the person out.
Right.
There was a time when me and my friend Laura, we were in Disneyland. It was after, what was it? It was after the parade, I want to say. And they had all the, you know, ropes up and everything around the hub and everything. Mm-hmm. And they had one section that was normally a walkway that you could get from the hub like to Adventureland. And they had that section, two sets of ropes, and they had a cast member in the middle of it. And she was telling people, like, go around. Like, you can't cut through here. You got to go around over there. And these people would just ignore the cast member and just mm-hmm. duck under the rope. And so me and Laura, we were waiting for someone. So we sat there. And, like, when she'd like, stop people halfway there, be like, you can't go. You got to go back. And, of course, she can't say anything. So we're just like, why don't you just listen to them? Like, there's obviously a reason, you know, we're just like giving her the backup, you know, and it was just funny because it was like, I mean, what are they, you know, the guest isn't going to get, you know, what can they do to us? Like, we don't work here, like, right. You know, and the poor cast member can't say anything. So I don't know. She was probably like, oh, God, you're going to cause like an argument here and it's going to be right. bad. But at the same time, it was like, thank you, because I can't say anything. But yeah, people are just nutty when it comes to stuff like that.
They are. They really are. And I think people have gotten nuttier since I worked there because I hear cast member stories all the time. And I thought, wow, in my day, that would not have happened. People just weren't as rude about things. Mm-hmm. But I just had
entitled.
To crazy.
There's a lot of crazy. Entitled people.
There is now, especially now. Yeah, but that Dumbo lady was just a nut job.
So you've worked the canal. You've worked Dumbo. What mm-hmm. else did you do in Fantasyland?
I worked Alice in Wonderland. And this is before some of the safety stuff up at the top.
Oh,
on the
yeah.
There.
When it was awesome.
Yeah, it was fun.
I don't know, though. I think they did a really nice job theming those railings. They blended
it. Yeah, but it's
well.
Still not as cool as it was.
They did. But you know what? The one part that I really miss on the railing is when you come out, when the very top, when you come out of that exit. Mm-hmm. There's a like a mini wall right there and you kind of miss the feeling that like, oh, maybe you're going to fall off or maybe you're going to,
oh,
you know.
yeah.
And that wall's there that kind of, and it kind of blocks the view of the Matterhorn right there.
Yep.
So that's the part that, and I know it's Cal Ocean. We don't want anybody to get hurt.
Right.
I get that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that kind of takes the fun out of that. But yeah, having to walk down the vine, that was pretty cool. That was fun. I liked working Alice. Alice was a fun ride to work.
The scenes in there are just so much fun. I think it'd be fun to like, well, any of the dark rides, but I do think it'd be fun just to like, just walk through when they're not going instead of riding them.
It's amazing though. When you walk through, you really get to see not so much Alice, but some of the other rides, you really get to see what they do with the lighting effects and how
oh, yeah,
it
definitely.
Looks when
like
those
Peter,
black lights
Peter
on.
Pan?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Peter, the bottom of Peter Pan. I mean, you know, those when those boats get stuck on Peter Pan, you got a problem. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I actually got hit by a boat on Peter Pan.
Oh no!
Yeah, I was in the ride before opening, and there was maintenance guys. And before you start the ride, you're supposed to make an announcement that
sure,
you're starting
that
the ride.
Sense. Yeah,
yeah. Well, they didn't. They had no idea, and they just assumed nobody was in there, and nobody made an announcement.
Oh no!
And so, yeah, all of a sudden, I got whacked with the boat. I was fine. There's nothing wrong, but it was
right,
just kind
right.
of like, whoa,
woke
wait.
Up,
wake up! But yeah. it's amazing the special effects. I mean, and Peter Pan was gorgeous before, and now with the enhancements that they did recently. It's really, really looks cool. Mm-hmm. I love that ride. That's one of my favorite rides.
Did you,
although the line is ridiculous, but
did you ever, because you worked at Peter Pan? Yeah,
mm-hmm, I did.
Did you ever have to like exit people off of that? Because I have questions.
I feel like that's a ladder situation.
Well, but you can't do a ladder because there's like show elements that you'd be sticking a ladder on.
There are. Now, 9 times out of 10, what you can do with an evac for Peter Pan is you can just move the boats literally out of their zones that they're in. Mm. So you just do a manual. You go onto the board and you just do a manual clearing the zones. So you just move the boats from one zone, and then you would just stack them up in the queue. You know, you stack them up in the queue area and then get everybody out that way.
Sure.
That was most of the time what happened. There were instances, I didn't work any of these instances, where we did have to get people off, but you can, with that system, you can move people to a better place where they can, where it's easier for them to get off, where there isn't a show element involved.
Sure.
But yeah, you're hanging by an elevated track.
Yeah.
So yeah, that does pose a problem.
Because the last time we went, I saw a couple areas where I feel like, okay, if they could get the thing maybe here, this could be like a platform that they could, you know, bring up a set of like a handrail or something and walk you off. But most of the time you're floating above everything.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, they'll just clear that zone. And again, I don't know if it works the same way now because technology's changed since I worked there. But literally what we would do is just clear a zone and then get people off the ride that way. Just move people out, move the cars up, move everything up, get everybody out.
The coolest thing about all the Fantasyland attractions, and I'm sure you could speak to this a little bit, is how small they actually are. Yeah. Because like I'm looking at an aerial shot right now of Alice, and I'm remembering that Alice really is tiny on the inside, like a good chunk of it's on the outside, even though it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah, and did you know that Mr. Toad and Alice are connected?
Yeah.
So Mr. Toad, Alice and Mr. Toad are actually they're kind of on top of each other.
Oh.
They're stacked in the ride.
Oh.
Yeah.
So like when you're up in Alice, you're going over Toad. Wow.
Exactly. And there was one time I was working Alice and we had to shut down Alice because there was in the hell scene inside of Mr. Toad. Mm-hmm. There was some kind of, it got like too hot in there.
Oh.
And they thought there was maybe like an electrical issue or something got too hot in there. Mm-hmm. So because it got too hot in there, we had to shut down Alice.
Oh.
Because Alice is on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had to shut that down because of that. So yeah, they're stacked. I mean, those Imagineers really knew what they were doing with stacking those things.
Every time that I see like the track layout of attractions, it's amazing to me. Even like when we were just looking at the aerial shot of the Storybook Canal boats, like that seems like it's forever long. But when you look at it from above, it's like, oh, it's not really that long. But there's all sorts of twists and turns. And so they just make it feel like it's a much longer thing. It's fascinating.
I am fascinated by this Alice thing now. I did like
Alice and Toad.
I'm looking at a satellite view, and obviously, like, okay, so hold on, where did I?
You're in Tomorrowland. You're too far.
So I'm looking at it, and Toad, you go in right here in the attraction, and then Alice. Mm-hmm. This is the outdoor part of it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew they shared a building, but I guess
I never blew my mind.
Thought of the fact that they would have been sharing space.
Yeah, because don't forget, in Alice, you're going down.
Yep.
And then at one point you rise up again, and then you do all the outside stuff.
And in Toad,
you're flat the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Toad bumps up to Peter Pan, and then Alice is on the other side. So, I mean, if you look, I'm just visualizing that aerial shot that you're looking at. Mm-hmm. But if you look at that, those three rides are in that little space.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And there's a shop in here, too.
Right. Don't forget about that.
And the bathrooms. Fantasyland bathrooms. Yeah.
Wow.
So, It's pretty clever how they did that. But yeah, so Mr. Toad and Alice are connected that way too. And then it's weird too, because sometimes when you're in a ride and then if you're exiting and then wait, don't go through that door because you're going to end up in the other ride. If you go through like this, if you go through the wrong door, you can end up like, wait a minute.
That'd be funny.
What ride am I in?
Just like pop out into.
I want to go to Disneyland now. And I want to be like, okay, so this many feet from this, or like, and look around. Now that I know this, This is you just blew my mind.
So now what you need to do is you need to find a track layout of both of these and like put them on top of each other so you can kind of see where they. Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So you've worked Storybook, Dumbo, Alice,
Teacups,
Mr. Toad, Peter Pan, Carousel.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Let's talk about Toad.
Yeah,
we were just talking about Alice, and they're on top of each other.
Yeah. Yeah, Toad's a fun ride. It was they've changed it now, thank goodness. But back in the day, we only had one cast member working that ride.
What?
Wow. Yeah, there was no unload position. That didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a challenge on Toad because you have to get in the car. The cars are so small and getting people in and out of those cars quickly was a big challenge too to get Toad running. And so Toad would break down a lot because of that, because if people didn't exit, you'd have a breakdown and there's nothing you can do about it.
And that's basically just a timing thing, right?
It's a timing thing. They've fixed it now because they've upgraded the equipment in there. But back then you had to kind of manually move cars and you couldn't manually move a car when someone was in it. And so the lap bar would release and then people wouldn't, you'd have to tell people, okay, get out. I'm like, get out. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to be rude about it, but people just kind of take their sweet old time or they'd sit there. There wasn't the tow car outside for people to take a picture in.
Oh, yeah.
Either. So people would sit there at the end and try to get a picture with a real camera, not a, you know, not a cell phone these days. And that would take long. I'm like, no, you can't do that.
So that's why there's a car out front now, Doug.
That's why there's a car out front. Same with Dumbo, same with the teacups. That's why there's the cars, because it takes too long for people to get situated for a picture.
Yeah.
So yeah, Toad was a really fun ride. I enjoyed working it, but it was a little bit more stressful than say Peter Pan or Alice. Those dark rides were the technology was better then. So it was still a little bit of a manual process, but it was a little bit easier to do that. Peter Pan, we had a lot of cameras on that too. So watching people as they left and then, okay, now I can move it up.
Oh,
because the sails kind of block your view.
Yeah.
In the load area there too. But it is. I love Toad. I think Toad's a fun ride to walk through.
As a
cast member, to walk through there and see how they do all this stuff with the black light and stuff. Mm-hmm, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Do they have a heater pumping into that final scene? Is that why it's always so dang hot in there, or do they just not have air conditioning in there?
No, there's some kind of heat element in there, and that's what that electrical thing was that I told you about with Alice. Yeah. It was something was going wrong with that, and it was hot outside too. So I think the temperature just got too hot in there. It's something that generates heat because it wants you to feel like you're in hell.
Yeah.
So and it's always very like kind of damp and gross in there too in that scene. Like
there was one time
you get stuck, you don't want to be in that, you don't want to be in the hell scene if you get stuck. No.
What I was just gonna say, one of the times there must have been we got stopped in there like right before you go out the door, and I was like, and it was a summertime of course, and I was like,
please open the door, just open the door
in here. I'm like, please, whoever is causing this to be stopped, just go.
Get out.
Hurry up.
But you're right though, that little section of track from offload to loading and getting to go the next thing, there's only like two cars in there or something like that. It's very small.
It's just a couple of cars, and so people have to be quick going out. But the people would just sit there, like they just didn't know to exit. I don't know why. Like the lap bar gets up, you go, but people just be like please exit.
Yeah,
I feel like at a lot of attractions though, there's usually I feel like a cast member that's like, thank you, have a good day, and like waving you out. And I feel like that's not at Toad.
Well, they do. There is a Toad.
There is now, but there didn't used to be.
Yeah.
On all those dark rides, it used to be just one cast member.
Oh, I can't.
So
imagine.
when something went down, you were it. You had to call it in if something happened. So that's a major safety thing, because again, if something happens and you're one person, so you may be looking at something. And I mean, the thing about Alice, I would have to stand in front of kind of the line at Alice, because kids would see the caterpillars coming up and they'd like run towards the caterpillar and like clock themselves against the caterpillar. So if I saw a kid that was kind of squirrely in line, I would have my hand on the button, but I'd like stop and like stand in front of the kid, be like, mm-hmm. Okay, now you can come in.
Right.
Because I'm like, I don't want to have to write up an incident report, and I don't want that kid clocking his head on the caterpillar.
Right.
So
did you get driven nuts working the tea party with the same music all day long?
I did not. I learned how to tune it out.
See, we were talking about this earlier about like it's a small world. Like you must tune it out at some point.
Yeah.
You just don't even think about it. Yeah. And it's funny because I still go on the teacups to this day. Everybody's mm-hmm. like, oh, I hate the teacups. I love the teacups.
they are fun.
They're fun. But I will sit there and I will sing the song the entire time and I don't even realize I'm doing it. Mm. I have all conscious, like it's just in my head, but I'm not. I can still have a conversation and be like, doo, 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 doo. Oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. And it's just ingrained in my head. But the best time on the teacups is when you can turn the music off for the parade. So then you get a little reprieve from it.
Oh,
but you really don't. You're working, so you really don't hear it. Especially in the mornings, you'd hear it more when the park's not crowded. You'll hear it more. But as the day goes on and you're there's more people there. There's more noise. Sure. You're not going to hear it as much.
That makes sense.
I'm happy to say I never had a guest.
Code V.
Thank you.
Wow, that seems like there must be some sort of accomplishment thing. Yeah, like you should get some sort of award,
merit badge.
there's a trick to that.
Oh, sure.
So I don't know. I just got really good at watching people, and so when the teacups would stop, I would kind of look and see like who maybe didn't look so good after. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so I would go over to their teacup and basically escort them very carefully to, because people have trouble finding the nearest exit. They do. Yeah. Their head's been spinning and they're like, where's the exit? And so I'd be like, oh, the exit's right over here. Now back then we were only, again, one person on working the teacups. So if the code V happened outside of the ride itself, like outside of the gate, I could not go out there. I was not allowed to leave my ride. So then custodial had to do it. If it happened,
Stephanie's just leading them out. Vomit like, over there.
Right over here, folks. Right over here. Here's the bushes right over here by Alice. Here's a perfect spot to code V. Right here. Here you go. So I would just direct people out. We did have that I called it barf out, but we had that Santa soap stuff that if somebody did code V on the ride, we would put it on there and then we'd call custodial and they'd come and professionally clean it. But I never had to use that because, again, I got people out like, oh, the exit's right here and the bathroom is over here. Here's the nearest restroom. Here you go.
Go take care of the exit
and go down this way, past the carousel and there's your bathroom. But so it's pretty funny, but I never had a code V on that. I had a custodial guy get mad at me one time. And because it was right outside the gate, and I said, I can't leave the ride. I said, I will get fired if I leave the ride.
Right, yeah.
Because somebody could go and hit the start button right there. I mean, some mm-hmm. guests could do that. It's not safe.
Good. Yeah,
it's
that's not safe.
He, he was mad at me. But then I told my lead about it. And the lead, my lead reported him that he complained about it.
Well, like, what's your job, dude? Your job is to be a custodial.
Sorry, it happened.
If you want to be an attraction operator, transfer to become an attraction operator.
But he just didn't understand because it's like, I cannot leave this gate. I leave this gate, I'm leaving the ride, and that's mm-hmm. not good.
Nope. So, yeah. I still can't believe there is only one part. Like, I would just think that the minimum would be two.
Well, now there is.
Now there is. Thank goodness. They were going through a lot of budget cuts and stuff back then because we had, there were some rides that clearly had a console for two people, but there was only one of us always working. Mm,
yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Which was just downright dangerous. And I think that's another reason why I like Storybook so much is there was a team over there. Sure. So there was always more than one person. So if something went wrong, you at least could. It wasn't just all on you of what to do. And not that I'm not good in an emergency situation. I mean, I was trained to do it, but I was very young working there too. Mm-hmm. And with age, you just learn things. You learn how to deal with people. You learn how to deal with situations.
Well, and when something goes bad, you want to have someone else there.
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
Anytime. If you have a dark ride and maybe something happens, you want to be able to have someone
stay at the front with the line mm-hmm. and then someone mm-hmm. go.
Or empty the line out if it's something. Yeah.
And we would literally have to wait for help. We would have to wait. We would have to call it in and then we'd have to wait. So people are stuck on a ride longer because You could evac the people right at the front who are in the load zone. That's about the most evac you could do. But you couldn't evac anybody else because you couldn't leave that load area. You couldn't leave that console.
That would be tough. That would be tough.
So
one thing I think would be super fun would be to work Mad Tea Party at night. I think
it's so beautiful.
The lanterns
at night.
Beautiful.
It really is. It's a pretty ride. It's fun, and then I love seeing everybody's pictures of like twirling the teacups, twirling and the lights and stuff. And I love seeing those pictures. Yeah, it really is a beautiful. Disney does a wonderful job with lighting, especially at night.
Mm-hmm. I love Disneyland at night. If I could only go to Disneyland at night for the rest of my life, I would. Man, but I'll tell you, even the horticulture team does a great job there because they've got like the vines and stuff going across there. And
speaking of the horticulture team, the scenes back to in Storybook Canal Boat. That's just incredible to me. Absolutely incredible. I can't even wrap my head around
how long that working the morning shifts. I got to see the gardeners out there cooking and doing stuff. I mean, there were times they'd have scissors cutting things because things are so small. So they would be out with scissors cutting things. And they had, it's funny, they had this beat up like rowboat that they would take out and they'd be rowing through the canal. And then we'd take our first ride out there and there'd still be gardeners up doing landscaping and fixing things and all sorts of things like 5 minutes before the park opened. And then they would just disappear and they'd be gone and it would look beautiful.
Park's open, guys. Just go disappear into your little holes wherever or your little.
Go home.
Yeah, I mean there'd be maintenance trucks right in front everywhere. And everything, but man, park opens, boom, all that stuff's gone.
That's crazy to me because I've, the last couple times I've been to Disney parks, there's some things. Well, one thing before I even started looking at this was one time when I got exited from the Matterhorn.
Oh, scary.
I didn't realize that there was along the gate, along the backside that faces Fantasyland, there's a gate there that's how you emergency exit out. Yep. And I never even knew it was there. I've walked by it a billion times.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, as you walk around, there's all these little hidden gates and stuff and access areas where people can get through. And you just don't, it's so well put together, you don't even notice it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, for evacs and stuff, off a dark ride, you could be going through a maintenance area. You could be going through different areas. Matterhorn. I never worked the Matterhorn. I had the opportunity to train over there, but I just didn't want to. Matterhorn, they've done a lot to fix the safety issues over there,
sure,
including fencing and walls. But there were several, when I worked there, cast members who got injured because it's so slippery up on the mountain. Having to clear the mountain is just downright dangerous. I like the Matterhorn. It's, now I call it my chiropractic adjustment. And I go to, I go on that and then I go on Indy to snap back.
There you go. So
that's the reverse of the Matterhorn.
Well, that's what you get for being the first tubular steel roller coaster.
Yeah, I know. I know. God bless Bob Gurr, but
exactly. You know, it's one of those things. We weren't on any section that was facing outward. We were in at one of the indoor sections and got just taken up like a very, very short little section to a walkway I didn't even know was there to an elevator that scared the bejesus out of me because there was I mean, I swear that thing could only fit maybe five people, and there was four of us in it, and it was very slow.
Was that the maintenance? Was that one maintenance? Did it look like a maintenance elevator?
It did. Yeah,
that's the one I was on. Yeah, that's the elevator that's inside there. Yeah.
Oh, that's so.
Isn't it rickety and creepy?
But I was like, is this safer than just leaving us on the mountain?
Yeah, can I just sit there until it starts going again?
Yeah. But we got taken down and the lady was like, you guys, because I guess they start at the top and work their way down for evac.
Yeah, that's
and
typical.
And we were towards the top and she's like, if I didn't have to get a bunch more people, I'd take you up to the basketball court. But because I was nerding out about it.
Oh, I'm sure you were. Yeah.
And she was just like, I would, but I got to get a whole bunch of other people. Like, I didn't even ask for it. She just like said that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. We understand. And then we came out of this weird spot on the mountain and came through some shrubs. And then there was a gate. In the big tall gate section, and there we were, and she closed the gate behind us and
said, "See ya, bye."
Yeah, and then I was like, "There's a gate here."
It's so funny that you talk about nerding out. I think a true Disney fan t- totally nerds out about getting evac'd from any ride.
Oh, like, yeah.
It doesn't matter what ride it is. Like, you just want to be evac'd off of a ride.
That's Teresa.
It's because it hasn't happened. I should think I'm the luckiest person ever, but I've never gotten...
Yeah, it's right
You've
here.
You've never
stuck
evac?
In a ride.
This little gate. I just found it. It's see this little walkway?
There it is.
You never would have even known it was there.
I know what you're. I know exactly what you're talking about.
It's right across from Alice. Right, you can see it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
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 It's so crazy.
I had recently the last evac I had was, it's been a while, but it was Pinocchio.
Oh.
And it just stopped. We were almost at the very end, but a friend of mine who was with me, he geeked out about it, and of course he got out his cell phone when we got evac out of there, and it was at kind of the very end of the ride, and there's Geppetto's stool that's right there, and he literally like tripped over Geppetto's stool because he was too busy filming, and I just lost it because it was just the funniest thing ever. Of like, how can you get hurt on an evac from Pinocchio?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I could see if something just slipped or something on Matterhorn or Space Mountain,
you get
your head, or I could see something like that, but you know, oh, how'd you hurt yourself? I tripped on Geppetto's stool.
Right.
Well, so you know, teasing him.
I always feel, I don't know, kind of bad, but kind of, you know, I see two sides. So I've seen this happens, it seems like the most on, let's say, Pirates of the Caribbean, where people will whip out their cell phones because they're like, sweet, we're getting evac'd. I'll record this and put it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And those cast members are very adamant about put the phones away. And I guess probably not from just a save the magic, but at the same time, it's also don't trip over Geppetto's stool.
Yeah, safety.
It's exactly why. It's not so much, I mean, the magic is the magic. And of course, nobody wants that ruined. But it's more for a safety thing of if they're paying attention and they're filming, they're not paying attention to where they're walking.
Yeah.
Well, and evacuing pirates might be slippery since
evacuing pirates is the challenge depending on where you're at.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen videos of people in the hip waders pushing the boats to a spot. Yeah. There was one. Oh. There was a lady. There was a female cast member. And I just remember thinking, good for her, because she was in the hip waders. She was pushing a boat by herself. And all these dudes are like up on the side, like helping people out. I'm like, good for her. Like, she doesn't need guy to go do it. Like, that's awesome. You know?
Great. Yeah. Fantastic.
Oh, man.
So, Stephanie, was there any other fun stories or any other memories that you wanted to share of your time at the parks?
Just, you know, it was such a fun time being there in the late 80s, early 90s. I got to do some really cool things when I worked there. I got to test ride Splash Mountain before it opened.
Yeah.
They were letting cast members go over there and ride before it opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you guys know the history of Splash Mountain, that it was very, very wet when they first started testing it. And we went over, a group of us from Storybook went over at right after work, because they had told us, don't go over there at lunch. Number one, because it's a little bit, we only have a half hour lunch.
Sure.
And it was a little bit of a walk to get over there. Plus, we had to go backstage because we were in our Fantasyland outfits.
Sure.
And so they didn't want us going over there. We had to literally go backstage and kind of sneak in the back way. So they said, make sure you go over there. Don't go over there at lunch because it takes too long. And also because you're going to get wet. And we're like, yeah, whatever, get wet, fine, whatever, you know, pirates. Like, we're thinking like, oh, pirates, you know, a little bit of water here and there. Oh, no, we went on it after work and we were still in our costumes. And we got drenched.
Oh, jeez.
And we went back. And what you did nowadays, you take your costume home and you launder your costume yourself and you wear it. Well, back then you traded in your costume and you got a clean one from the costuming.
Yeah.
So we all go back to costuming and we're changing back in our street clothes and we all go back to costuming with these like wet soaked costumes. And they're
dripping.
Like Splash Mountain. We're like, yep.
Well, I guess at least you did it while you were still able to change into dry clothes instead of changing and then getting soaked.
I can just imagine the guest comments, did you fall in?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't go on her boat, she'll sink us.
Yeah, so they're like, oh, did you fall in? Yeah. So we weren't allowed to do that. And then the other two cool things I got to do when I worked there was the opening of Fantasmic.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was at the cast member preview for Fantasmic.
Nice.
We were sitting on the rail in the very front center.
Wow.
And when that river lit up on fire, oh my goodness. Good grief. That was crazy.
Yeah.
So much fun.
I still remember that the first time I ever saw Fantasmic. I was like,
the
river is on fire.
Yeah, that.
And if they could find a way to make that flames green.
Oh, wouldn't that be cool? Oh, my gosh, that would be amazing. And then Toontown. When Toontown opened, I had the opportunity to go train over at Toontown, but I'm like, nope, I don't want anything to do with Toontown. I was like, nope.
I'm happy where I am.
Nope,
thank you.
I'm good. Because the line for Toontown, when Toontown first opened, the line to get into Toontown was all the way down, like by the castle.
I'm not kidding.
To get in, because Toontown has a finite capacity.
Right. Yeah.
To get so many people in there.
Mm-hmm.
But we got to test Roger Rabbit.
That's
when they were opening that. Yeah. But what was really cool about it was when they were testing it, there was a glitch in the system. And it was a fun glitch, because at the very end of the ride, if you had to do this just at the exact moment, but if you just held on real tight to the wheel, and you were put in a backwards position, you would hold tight and you would come out backwards out into the unload area. So you had to get out of the car because the exit of where you look, the entrance to the vehicle. And so they're like, uh-oh, that's a problem. So they fixed it before the ride opened, but a lot of us would go over there and we just play with it and like, hey, right here, turn it. Hey, hold the wheel as hard as you can. Just and we come out backwards.
What a funny, weird glitch that they probably were like, why is that even a thing?
Right.
Now we have to fix it.
And leave it up to cast members to figure that out.
That's perfect, though. That's why they have you guys test them first.
Yeah. If anybody's going to find some weird thing.
Yeah. And I had a friend who was on opening crew of that ride too. So they were going on it all the time and trying to figure out, okay, how do we do this? And
that's so strange.
They were the ones who kind of figured it out. And then they showed me how to do it. I'm like, cool. Yeah, just hold it right here. Not backwards.
You know what I miss? I miss the Jolly Trolley.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you a story about that. The Jolly Trolley. So when Toontown first opened, the Jolly Trolley, they couldn't even operate that thing because there were too many people in Toontown.
Yeah.
And Michael Eisner came in one day right after Toontown opened, and he was livid that they could not run the trolley because it would cost like $1 million to put the trolley in.
Sure.
And he was furious that they couldn't run it because there were too many guests in the park.
Mm-hmm. He's like, this is a very expensive prop now.
It's not going anywhere. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, dang. I miss it. I wish they could find a way to bring it back because I feel like it adds that kinetic energy that Toontown kind of needs.
And so, it's so sad. It just sits there like, what is this? It's just sad.
Yeah. Why? I guess I don't know why it doesn't go anymore. I figured they just...
I think that little kids, because Toontown is full of little kids, that it's hard to run in front of it.
And because it moves too, because it...
Because it wobbles.
It bounces. It kind of wobbles, and so they were always having to stop it, and people try to jump on and off it too. It's just people have to ruin things sometimes. Imagineers have great ideas and then things have to get ruined, which is sad.
You know,
or people steal things, like people stealing the silverware from the trays from Galaxy's Edge when that opened.
Oh yeah.
And the apple.
The Snow White apple. Oh yeah. Oh, that was an actual apple. Now it's just like a hologram kind of thing. But that was a real thing of people stealing the apple. Oh yeah. The apple would get stolen all the time.
They have a bucket in the back.
Yeah, they did. I was reading a book about it.
Yeah.
They just like had a bucket.
They just replace
them.
Yeah. That was crazy. Yeah. That was one of the things.
They should just electrify it and teach people. Hey, I got zapped in there. Well, weren't you trying to steal property? Yeah.
Well, and prior to when I worked there, when I was a teenager and had an annual pass, we used to steal the door stickers off of the people mover, the doors will shut automatically stickers.
Oh.
They just peeled right off. So I know plenty of people that have those. We also used to swipe the Captain EO 3D glasses. Those were popular to swipe to. So this is before, prior to my employment there.
Right. Yeah.
But
yes,
yeah,
we do not condone this action in today's Disneyland.
No, we do not. But yes.
Well, good thing there are two attractions that don't exist anymore.
Right.
You know, Stephanie, I got to say that of all the cast members that we've had on before, you've definitely been the one to give us the most like devious kind of things that were going on. You know, most, you know, and I was like, wow, she was kind of a bad girl doing all this stuff. Huh? That's right. It makes it fun, I guess.
It was all in good fun. I mean, I'm not a bad person by nature. It's just,
right,
you know,
right.
it was in my youth. We were having fun. We did things. And again, back then you could get away with things. I know I've heard, I was just listening to another podcast about some stuff that went on the Jungle Cruise kind of around my time as well. And there was a lot of fun antics and things like that going on. And it just made the job fun. And we were never doing anything that was unsafe or
that
was questionable. It's just times have changed and rules are different now. I feel like there's a lot more close supervision now than there was in my day. My day, there were a lot of budget cuts. There weren't as many people around. So things would kind of, you know, happen and there wasn't as much oversight, if you would, as there is now.
Right.
Well, you know what though? I think that's kind of neat because it, from what it sounds like, there was a lot of really amazing experiences. We had a cast member on a couple weeks ago that talked about walking through all sorts of different attractions after his shift. And then you say got to do a trip around the jungle and be a Jungle Cruise for a journey. So that's pretty cool because otherwise, you know, that experience that like nowadays you wouldn't be able to do that. So
you could not get away with that now. You would be so fired. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And at the time, I didn't even really think about getting fired.
Right.
I thought, well, if I get caught, maybe I'll get written up or something. But then it didn't even matter to me because I was just like, I want to do the Jungle Cruise, and why aren't women working on the Jungle Cruise?
Right.
Yeah.
Why can't I be Safari Stephanie and work on the Jungle Cruise? I work storybook. I know how to spiel. I know how to load a boat.
Right.
What's the difference? What's the difference? I need to learn how to shoot a cap gun. I mean, really? That's it. I mean, it was one of those things. It is like, why are they not allowing this? What is the problem here? Women not being allowed to do this. And so,
You know, it kind of reminds me. So one of my first like big boy job, I guess, is I worked at a movie theater and I was an assistant manager. And I remember like, you know, it didn't pay great and all this stuff. Like you didn't work there because of the pay. You worked there because you liked movies or you thought it was a fun job or whatever. And I kind of feel like that's how Disneyland should be is, you know, sometimes you let people get away with silly things because like that's one of the like silly perks of the job is that you can go and have a little bit of fun. If you can't have fun and it doesn't pay well, you know, and all this stuff, I feel like it's not really enticing for people to work there. I mean, obviously Disneyland, people love Disney. Even if they hate the job, they might like the magic and the allure of Disney, so they might work there. But you know what I mean? Like you're not going to work there for, you know, a career, if you will, it, you know, because, you know, if it's not at least fun.
And that's the thing. It was so much fun. It was so much fun going in every day and going to work. And again, I was very young when I worked there. That was my first real job other than babysitting, really. And so I had to learn a lot.
First job.
It was a very cool. People were very envious that I got to work and on Storybook too. It was it was actually kind of prestigious of attractions because, oh, you know, you guys are the girls that sit on the boats and you talk to people and yeah, it's like, yeah, I do that all day. And I look back at it now and I think, wow, that was just really a fun time in my life and something that at the time, you know, I maybe didn't think about it so much at the time, but now looking back and reflecting on that time of how magical that was and how special it really was and how lucky I got to work on that kind of Walt iconic ride, you know, out of all the rides in the park and in Fantasyland too, which was one of his favorite lands and something that all kids that go to Disneyland obviously fall in love with Fantasyland and it's a great place to work. And yeah, I worked with a lot of kids and that was fine. A lot, some cast members like, I don't want to work in Fantasyland because I don't want to work with all the little kids. I liked little kids. I was fine with little kids. I was great. I liked the parents. It was fun talking to them and just seeing the whole family there. all of that stuff was just a really fun time. And yes, and you're right. I think that if it wasn't a fun job, I wouldn't have continued to work there. Yeah. So we did things that made it fun, or had things happen that made it fun, because there were times when it wasn't so fun. When yeah. there was just your guests yelling at you, or again, the crazy Dumbo lady. I mean, yeah. you like, you can't make that stuff up. You know, you come home from work, it's like, how was your day? Oh, there was a crazy lady on Dumbo today. What? Really? You know, my mom was like, are you serious? Like, yeah.
I feel like every day you came home, you probably had some story.
I did. And every day I came home too. That's the one thing about working storybook. We had to help people on and off those boats. And in the summertime, we'd be just sunscreen all over us.
Yeah.
And your hair would just be, and I had super, super long hair back then. It was the '80s. I had big hair. And I would come home, and then you'd be touching people all day too. And so every break I would go back and like, I mean, we think we're washing our hands a lot now with the pandemic. Oh no. I was doing like surgical scrub every time I went on a break, because you're literally touching people, helping them in the boats.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I would come home, the first thing I would do was just run to the shower, because I didn't want anybody hugging me, touching me, anything. I had to just get out and just like, okay, I need to just wash off. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, we had the crazy tan lines. So you know, we had these culottes that went above our knees, and then our knees were exposed. And then we had these high socks that went up to like right below our knee. Mm. So there was a good few inches that would get very tan out there on the canal.
You go to the beach and people are like, what type of tan line is that?
Right. So what I would do on my days off, I would go, I had a chair out in the lawn here in my backyard, and I would take a towel and I would roll the towel and I would put it over my knees areas, and then I would try to blend in the other, even out my tan.
Wow.
That's too funny.
Well, Stephanie, we've had a great time talking to you, which brings us to our last question. If you could work at the parks again, what would you do and why? And the sky's the limit. This could be a real position, or it could be something totally made up. So what would you like to do? And I guess as a secondary question, would you work at the park again?
Well, if I were to ever go back to the park again, I would absolutely love to be a tour guide.
Nice.
Not working guest relations, though. And you have to do your time in guest relations and deal with the people and the questions and the complaints in guest relations now before you can be a actual tour guide. But I would love to be a tour guide and just give tours of Disneyland and kind of share my knowledge and of Disney history and just fun facts about Disney with people and talk to people. I don't think I could, you know, I'm a little too old now to be balancing boats and loading boats on storyboard or doing the jungle, even though it would be fun. It's like, no, I think I'm a little too old for that. But I would like to do just be a tour guide and just give guided tours of Disney and just share my love with all the people that come and just have a good time and give people some education about the history of Disney.
Very nice.
Guest tour guide is a very common, like a very popular one. And I'd love to be a tour guide.
It's like one of the most perfect positions there, though, because you get to like be your nerdy Disney self.
Yeah.
Plus enjoy the park.
That's true.
Yeah. And I think I'd be good at it too, because again, I did storybooks. So I know how to, I'm good with people. I can do groups of people, and I don't, I'm not, clearly I'm not shy, and I can talk to anybody. So that doesn't bother me at all. Some people are put off by that of talking to strangers or just having to be on the spot.
Yeah. But
you'll never know what you'll learn though, and who you might run into.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for chatting with us and sharing all sorts of fun and crazy stories from your time at the parks. I learned quite a few new things, actually. So
the last two cast members we've had on have had things that I didn't even expect to talk about. And I was like, wow, Storybook Land. Amazing. I loved hearing everything about Storybook Land, because I don't think about that attraction.
You don't. And you think it's, a lot of times people just think it's just this boring ride. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more to it. There's a lot more to everything that goes on at Disney.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us tonight, Stephanie.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure talking to you and sharing stories. And you have a great podcast, and I'm just happy to be a part of it.
Thank you.
Now it's time to turn to Trivia Land with producer James to get the answers to this week's trivia. I think we did okay this week.
I mean,
you were the one with our fate in your hands.
I mean, you shouldn't feel crushed about how you did this week, but there's a lot of, It doesn't help that there were two number questions.
Yeah, so. You know, we're not good with the numbers.
No, you definitely aren't. So that's where we start with stumper number one from listener Donna S. What year did Walt Disney start animating? Based on the end of the interview she heard on YouTube from Fletcher Markle, it was 1920.
Oh, so kind of between us. Yeah. Lee in our chat got that one right.
Shout out to Lee. Nice work. Question number two came from Liberty M. Before Ghirardelli Soda Fountain and Chocolate Shop, what was the viewing attraction in that place? Teresa's excitement right on. Mission Tortilla Factory. February 2001.
I put in the mission part, so.
Good job, Tay.
You also you helped. Still existed.
because I feel like I had a fresh tortilla there not that long ago.
No, quite a while. Well, just the fresh bread. No, you get a little chocolate square now instead.
But you do that at every Ghirardelli store. They give you fresh chocolate. Anyway.
All right. Our third one from listener Quincy K. How many audio animatronics are in the Tiki Room? 225. You both undershot it.
225?
I was going to go into the 200s, but I was like, I don't know. That seems like a lot.
You knew it was a lot.
Seems crazy.
And our last one, the summary is, what were some of the marketing promotional things they did to make sure that everyone heard about the opening of the Indiana Jones adventure? You got two that were on my list, and I do believe that Serial Decoder did actually happen. So the Super Bowl halftime, Indiana Jones did make an appearance there. They actually played the song and did a stunt presentation. There was indeed a TV special. CBS Television aired the special on the making of the ride in tandem with the final installment of the Indy trilogy, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, 4 days after the ride opens.
Nice.
The other ones, for several months, National Rental Car, I should say, commercials featured scenes from the attraction. Indiana Jones's displays graced the windows of Disney's 348 retail stores, and inside customers were able to purchase Indiana Jones items such as replicas of his famous hat.
Right.
In the western United States, Disney produced a traveling Indiana Jones display and mini stunt show that stopped at many malls.
That's cool.
And the Disney Channel, the company's cable television outlet, if you weren't aware, aired several Indiana Jones adventure programs.
I couldn't tell by the fact that it was called the Disney Channel.
Right. I took most of that word for word from the OC Register. So.
Oh.
Gotcha.
What was the last thing? I'm sorry. I was too focused on the fact that I was going to make fun of you for the Disney Channel.
Disney Channel aired several Indiana Jones adventure programs.
Oh, cool.
So. Some super neat stuff this week from a mix of myself and the listeners. Keep sending those questions our way so we can either stump them or make them feel good about getting some of these answers right, because that excitement is just great when they get
that
right answer.
But that doesn't happen very often.
So our email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
We will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.